Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mike and Leona, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Leona, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
Everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B for episode 12 of Survivor Island of the Idols. And today, we're talking about love. First, here, audience, it's your co-host, Leona Boris. Leona, come on out.
Yay! I'm wearing a... What am I wearing? A Polaroid hoodie. Oh my gosh, Mike, it's a picture!
Wow, I didn't know if you were going to take any pictures while I was here on the, hosting the B&B, so thank you for informing that. That's our secret code.
Yay!
And of course, we're not alone here. We're bringing in more love. Audience, you want to see your guest? Mary Krakowski, come on out!
Woo! Oh, okay, hold on. I've just run up, and I've jumped on top of Mike and Leona, and then wrapped them in bear crawl, and then we backed up, and then we did that thing that Kat and her brother did, where they sort of ran at the ground to each other, and it was a beautiful moment. Everyone was looking on a little bit concerned, but we had a good time.
Oh my god, no, Mike, now you have to do... Talk to me about this woman.
Yeah, wait, so, Mary... you walked out here. Explain to me how that process works.
So first off, let's back up. I took a flight here, watched a lot of great movies on the plane, let me tell you.
All right, Mary, really go ahead and co-pilot with me on this challenge. You can explain to me the concept of a flight. Are 13-year-old boys allowed on it? How many movies can you watch? I really need to know what happens on this thing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for inviting me to Survivor and to the B&B. I'm really happy to be back.
Yeah, this is like hands down the weirdest intro ever. Like, I'm not even quite sure what's going on right now.
I'm so glad this surpassed when I did a vampire impression as Nick Wilson last season during David versus Goliath. I'm glad that bar's been cleared.
Well, yeah, I forgot about that one.
We have a very interesting episode to talk about several events occurring leading to quite a chaotic tribal council. Maybe not so much a chaotic outcome. But first, Mary, we had you on during Big Brother, but we haven't had you on during Survivor proper. And, you know, it's tantamount to our new guests here on the B&B for them to give us your Survivor resume. So, you know, we heard that you were a bit of a newcomer to Big Brother, especially to the concept of live feeds. How does Survivor compare to that trajectory?
Yeah, I'm now rethinking my intro I just gave and realizing that people may or may not know who I am or be used to me, because if you haven't listened to Twitch, that's probably the only Survivor stuff I've gotten into really on Rob's podcast. So, hi everyone. I'm Mary. I sometimes do Big Brother stuff, but, Survivor, actually, I am much more, used to. You will not find me revealing any deep secrets about how I popped in on Survivor in season 35 or anything like that. I've been here the whole time. I think my first episode of Survivor was the finale of season one, actually.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, been around for a while. It was, I think, yeah, because I know I watched all of season two with my family, but I think we sort of started that. I mean, I was like 5 years old, but we started it. We were one of those classic Jeff Probst, you know, families who grew up every Thursday night, every Wednesday night watching Survivor. So I didn't get into the whole podcasting thing until I think San Juan del Sur might have been my first season of listening to the podcast. And that was sort of when I got more into like the strategy of it all. But, you know, my family, we were your classic casuals for a while of watching for the challenges and for the Colby Donaldsons of the world. So that's how it started. But we got there eventually. There was a little transitional period where I was doing like Survivor Sporkle quizzes. And yeah, it was Survivor was always my thing in high school and then early college. That was like, when you have to give a fun fact, mine would be like, oh, I've applied for Survivor or something like that. So of course, that's the downside to getting into the Survivor community is you realize that you have to come up with a new fun fact.
Yeah, because everybody else has the exact same fun fact.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. I wouldn't say it's like big fish in a small pond. It's more so like you're like a red fish in a pond of blue fish, and then you get put into an ocean filled with red fish. And then you need to figure out exactly what makes you different.
Yeah, exactly. So that's when I had to come up with doing other weird things, I guess, to set myself apart.
I love it. I love it. I mean, uniqueness is something that definitely stands out in this season of Survivor. And it seems like you were doing the same to make you stand out one way or the other. So I guess, you know, going all the way from watching the season one finale to nowadays, obviously things are looking a little different. And things are looking a little different after the boot of Karishma this week. What have your thoughts been on Island of the Idols specifically so far, now that we are really rounding the bend in terms of this season?
I think, like a lot of people, the season started out pretty high for me. I thought the casting in general was very dynamic to begin with, and they've done a lot of interesting things with the editing. And I felt like, especially coming after last season, the twist didn't bother me that much. It hasn't been stealing a particularly large amount of screen time, and we've been getting some really funny moments from it. Obviously, the merge episode changed a lot of, you know, the viewership's perspective of the season and feelings toward it, rightfully so, and I was definitely in that same boat with that. I think, you know, it's still kind of in this weird spot of it's been several episodes since then, and kind of things are just churning on, and looking at them as individual episodes, I think there's been a lot of really interesting stuff to look at and talk about and really fun things. So, you know, I'm curious to see how, when the season's all wrapped up as a whole, what the overall opinion of it is, because it feels like it's been like a, you know, it was like a 7 or 8 out of 10 for a while, then dropped down to like a 0, and now is popped back up to probably, you know, a 6 or so. But is that 6 because of the 0, or, you know, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really interesting point, because it almost feels a little bit like we're in some sort of weird Survivor purgatory where...
Leanna, that was last season with Edge of Extinction.
Yes, of course. No, of course. Where everything just gets wrapped up neatly in the finale after 9 days. But yeah, it feels like because this story isn't over yet, it feels like there's going to be... I mean, obviously, there's going to be an ending, and we're going to see how the final seven all finish. And so, yeah, you don't almost like, I don't want to have a feeling on it this season yet until I sort of see how everything wraps up, just because there's seems like unfinished business.
Right.
Definitely. I'm waiting for it all to come out, and then I'll make more of a final judgment at that point.
And it's so, this week has been so interesting because I watched the episode, and I don't know what either one of you thought, but I watched this episode and I'm like, this was fine. This was a perfectly, in my opinion, like benign episode of Survivor. Yes, for those who have been rooting for Karishma, the outcome was less than ideal. And, you know, but there was a lot of Nora wackiness going on. So I thought there was some fun things here. Probably my least favorite episode of the season, obviously, besides the merge. But then I go on to social media and I witnessed probably the most emotional reaction from the community perspective since those merge episodes. It seems like for a lot of people, like, this was the straw that broke the camel's back for them. And I do not want to, you know, invalidate anyone's opinions or feelings, because obviously everything is subjective when it comes to approaching this show. But I'm just very intrigued to see why people feel that way, especially given, like you're talking about, that, you know, we still haven't finished this story, to see opinions like there's nobody likable left, this season is toilet water, Tommy's going to win and nobody else has a chance. Like, those very emotionally charged comments have sort of come out of the woodwork this week, at least more so compared to, for example, the episode when Missy and Aaron left. I just think it's a really interesting thing to witness.
Yeah. So, oh, go ahead, Mary.
I was talking, actually called my mom after she saw the episode, because I've been watching most Survivor episodes on Thursday morning now. So I've been really busy this week. And I actually kind of had like the, I went back to having a casual perspective on this episode. When I watched it, I was not able to look at Twitter or anything online when the episode came out. So I didn't see a lot of that backlash initially. And I called my mom and I said, you know, hey, I'm going to have to podcast about Survivor this week. You know, do I need to worry about anything? What's the fan reaction? Is there anything controversial going on? And she basically said, you know, I screamed at the TV a couple times and Twitter doesn't seem to be happy, but, yeah, you know, so I got the lowdown from her before I watched the episode. I think with looking at it in the light of just this one episode and not the full season, I agree. It seems like a pretty sort of middle of the road episode, some kookiness, but nothing too crazy. And I don't know if I completely subscribe to the Tommy's definitely going to win, no one else stands a chance kind of angle yet. I think if that does end up being the case, it will make episodes like this, you know, feel different in retrospect. But I don't know. I don't know how much I agree with that yet.
Well, first of all, the Twitter doesn't seem to be happy is just sort of a good statement in general.
Yeah, just really about any subject, any person, really.
Right. Twitter doesn't seem to be happy. Although, so I actually had a very similar experience to you, Mary, where I watched the episode live and was on my phone then. But then after that, I didn't want to get spoiled on The Masked Singer, and I wasn't able to watch that until Thursday night. So I pretty much stayed off social media. And then, yeah, Mike had mentioned something about, like, in our, you know, trying to organize the episode. Episode, like, yeah, Twitter's going crazy. So when I finally checked in on Thursday, I was like, oh my God, like, what is going on? because, you know, to me, this was the sort of benign episode, but I get that feeling of like, ugh, you know, like, come on, man. I don't know if I have like a more specific critique than that, but it's just sort of this ugh feeling that I get when I think about this season.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, understandably, people are ticked off at, you know, obviously there was this sort of shades of like the row 2-4 and the you know, the bottom feeders, quote unquote, joining together to take them out. There were sort of shades of that where, you know, you had the group of four Vokais going on the Loveland's Roar, and it's like, oh, now these four are going to join up and take out Tommy. Oh, this is super interesting. And then Dean outs the Planet Tribal Council. That leads to Nora just completely Nora-ing it up and making things far from normal, with, you know, essentially outing every detail about what happened at camp to everybody. And I can understand the frustration if you wanted that sort of shakeup to happen. But that being said, I also feel like this isn't a cast that's, you know, afraid to make shakeups. You know, I don't want to, you know, jinx the rest of the season. It feels to me like you can adopt the adage that you do for like Chicago weather or Seattle weather to Survivor Island of the Idols. If you don't like who's getting voted out, just wait about 5 minutes and then something crazy is going to happen.
Well, not only that, but, you know, it was we had two factions in this, you know, episode where there was eight people left. And at least from my perspective and how I've been viewing the season, the people who went on the reward, I didn't look at them and go, oh, yeah, of course, they've been this tight group for the whole time. Like, all of them have spent their time being the underdogs in different episodes. You know, Tommy and Dan and Lauren were on the outs in their swap tribe for a little while. And Janet, of course, was. And you know, the fans like Janet. So I don't really look at this as like, oh, one part's dominating and it's the part we don't like or anything like that. And not even that. But, you know, if Tommy does win, I don't think that it's like, oh, all hope is lost in a general season. He's kind of would be a boring winner, but he's not. He's like a, you know, Aris or something.
I don't know. I mean, I feel bad for Tommy because I think part of it also is he's, you know, when it's a stretch of what four male winners now. And in a season that has been so female heavy with such strong women, like that's also kind of like, ugh, adds to my ugh feeling.
Totally.
I personally think he's going to win. I think, Mary, like you mentioned, although we haven't really seen this four really be that like power four, it really does seem like all of the old Leros are going, that was the orange, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're all going. And so I think it's going to be, most likely, Elaine goes next, and then we have some sort of shuffling where Tommy is able to get to the end and win. Like, that's how I see it playing in my head. And I think that also leads, that sort of pagonging is also kind of boring. So there's a little bit of me that's kind of dreading the end of this season just because it's like, ugh, get it over already. I don't know. I'm just so meh on this season right now. It's really hard.
But I think a lot of the reason that a lot of what you just said, you know, is true and comes up has more to do with this season as a piece of Survivor history, looking at the last four winners, right, and that sort of thing. And less so about looking at it as a, like, if you watched all the seasons of Survivor in a random mixed up order, would you have as many of the same comments about this? It's kind of as a standalone, which is obviously really hard and you can't necessarily look at everything, or you shouldn't look at everything as a standalone season. But I keep playing sort of back and forth of just looking at the episode, just looking at the season, and then looking at it in context. And I think those two things are where we get sort of that kind of breaks down the like super fan and the casual disconnect sometimes. Maybe if you've skipped a lot of seasons, you're not looking at it from that way.
Yeah. And actually, it's really funny, for some reason, like, this season is less than the sum of its parts. Like, the like each, like, Karishma individually awesome, Nora individually awesome, Dean individually, oh my gosh, like, just entertaining TV because he's insane, you know? And so, like, you have all of these different aspects and characters. There's nothing against Tommy, nothing against Lauren, but I don't know, for some reason, and maybe it's the whole merge boot episode that really is sort of like tainting my feeling on this whole season, or like you said, when you put everything together in the context of Survivor over the past couple years, you know, maybe that's what's giving me this feeling. But how do you separate the two? Can you separate the two, and should you, is an, I think, another valid question.
Right. And I think that's sort of what the fan base is going through, which again was why I'm so interested. And Grant, again, I will say I don't disagree with what people are thinking, especially to your point, Liana. You know, I think it wouldn't look great if Tommy does end up winning, considering he would be the fifth male winner in the row, and you know, four out of five of those happen to be white men between the ages of like 20 and 35. And you know, it really does then beg the question of like, okay, is modern Survivor benefiting a certain type of person? Because you look for the trends there. But I think Mary brings up an interesting point, and I think, you know, it goes back to what you both said in the beginning of, I am so interested in rewatching this season when all is said and done. I'm someone who personally, and look, I know very well that many, many people do not agree with the way that I look at things, but I'm someone who looks more at for the journey than the destination. So from that perspective, even looking at this episode, like, the destination was pretty crappy. Right? I think people put a lot of stock in Karishma the past few weeks with her underdog story. She had a very uplifting episode this time around, really went full circle with her feelings on her husband. And it sucks to see her go out in this regard, especially when people were legitimately thinking she could be a winner up next to some of these other choices. But that being said, the journey that we went to get there, specifically the entire second act of the episode, which was Nora's entire tirade against her alliance and willingness to flip over completely, I thought was a lot of fun. So again, I think it just depends on the way that you look at things. And I'm not disputing any sort of feelings people might have about, okay, I'm done with the season after this. But I just thought it was a very explosive reaction from the fans' perspective. And I don't think we've seen as explosive of a reaction in general since those merge episodes, when
I feel similarly in that I think sometimes the winner, a good winner of a not so great season, can boost up the season a little bit, but just because you have a winner that you didn't want for an otherwise interesting season, it doesn't have to ruin in perspective. Like, if Tommy wins, I don't think that should take away from how great Nora and Karishma have been. So I kind of see your point there. I think it really depends on how the whole thing shakes out as well. But I'm watching the show for the episodes, not just for the winner.
All right. Well, let's get into talking about the episode. And I just mentioned her. You just mentioned how great of a character she is. And I could not agree more. We got to start with Karishma, the cat with nine lives. Apparently lost her final one here as she gets voted out in eighth place amongst the Whispergate 2019. Maybe the exit Whispergate Island of the Idols edition, I would say. Maybe the Edge of Extinction version, I think, still trumps it in terms of just pure epicness with the Julia boot. But Liana, what did you think about Karishma preseason and how she was going to eventually do?
Okay, so Karishma answered what type of soup are you with alphabet soup. Okay, and I had her for my prediction making the jury. So Karishma was part of the Alphabet Soup Alliance, which insulated her for the first part of the game. However, her alliance mates didn't really trust her because she talked too much and spread secrets to those outside of her alliance. She was brought along as a potential endgame goat by the true power players of the alliance. But when she became too much of a liability, she was voted out. Alpha, bye, girl, bye.
Is that like the opposite of hey, girl, hey, is bye, girl, bye?
Bye, girl, bye, but it's alphabet, alpha, bye, alphabet, girl,
wow,
bye.
Wow, so you're just,
alpha,
it's bye, like girl, layers bye. On layers.
It's like trying to make something work that definitely does not work.
Well, I will say, outside of that double pun you just tried to put in there, I'd say it was an interesting, like, similar trajectory in that, you know, I think she was regarded as a goat at a certain point. I guess the question is, you know, did she get booted because she was so much of a goat still that they wanted to take her out? Like, I think Dan said something along the lines of, like, if we keep her around round after round, she's just going to be too appealing to take to the end. Or could it be that she presented herself as too threatening when she was able to play an idol last episode? I think the jury's still out on that. But I think, you know, you matched her pretty well in terms of her ultimate trajectory.
Yeah, I was actually pretty happy with this one. I originally thought I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure I had a pre-jury, but no. So I'm good with it.
Well, I had her pre-jury. I sort of had her in, like, I wouldn't say like the Missy position, but basically I said that, like, she seems to be in control from the first few votes, but then her alliance turned on her when they found her too bossy and demanding. She told me in the preseason that, like, she has this very leader part of her brain that she's going to have a lot of difficulty turning off. I did say she would discuss her marriage and crossroads in life at least once when she was on the show. And I said she would get in arguments at camp when she felt that others aren't pulling her weight. So I either did completely right or just completely off the mark in terms of my predictions on Karishma. But to be fair, she was a polarizing character. So I guess it makes sense to have things one way or the other.
Yeah, that was pretty good, I think. I mean, even the stuff that, like, wasn't right, I guess I could see it, even though it didn't actually come true. I don't know if that gives you extra fake points or not, but I like
thank
it.
You. Thank you for the ghost points. Did you guys watch Karishma's Ponderosa video?
Sorry.
I did.
The Ghost Island points.
It's so interesting, because I cannot think of a more unique perspective from an eliminated player where she gets out and she's like, great, I can finally be myself now. Like, it was, I think that people do transform when they reach the jury. Like, you see Missy sort of do it, where she sort of turns off game bot mode and goes into more being a warmer, friendlier person. But I guess we didn't necessarily see firsthand how uncomfortable Karishma was, apparently, from the get-go. And I can only imagine how much that influenced her experience out there.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen another Ponderosa where someone comes off and the reaction of everyone she's just been playing for multiple days with is like, wow, we don't even know who this person is. So that was pretty crazy.
Yeah, unless it's like Chelsea from Ghost Island, in which we don't know who she is.
Well, Mike, when you interviewed her, like, did you feel like she was sort of already in game mode, or did you get more of the Ponderosa Karishma?
I sort of got a hybrid. Like, we were laughing, we were having a good time, and, like, it seems like on the island, it got to the point where she was telling me about, you know, the day before her final day when, like, this foursome of her, Nora, Dean, and Elaine came together. And she's like, to be honest, that was one of my better days. And if that's one of your better days, like, that's a low, low bar to clear. So, yeah, it seemed like, at least when I was talking with her, she seemed personable. I think she was still sort of, you know, she was a little... she's a little nervous. Everyone was a little nervous, but I think it makes sense. You know, I think And not to say that the other contestants didn't have, you know, things that they were working for that weren't just the money and the title from outside of the game. But I cannot imagine the pressure that Karishma was going through as the first Indian American Survivor contestant, knowing that even if you don't want to have that representation tattooed onto you, it's going to be by the fans. And mm-hmm. so it's almost like saying, okay, you know, the decision that I have to make is also a decision that's going to, you know, have to represent this huge population of people by default. And I can imagine that's an initial thing to sort of make you uncomfortable, added on top of apparently the way that people were treating her around camp, and whether that was part of a guise or not to hide a secret alliance, you know, it sort of varies. But I think it definitely did not help her emotional aspects of looking at everything from a day-to-day perspective.
Oh, man, yeah, I can't even imagine having to play the game with sort of having that mental burden over your head as well. You know, it's hard enough to do that. Maybe that's why, like, average or middle, what, 20 to 35 year old white males do well. They're like, yeah, I don't have to worry about that. Everybody knows what white men are.
All right, so Mary, we're going to turn things over to you. We did not get an Island of the Idols thing. That's another really weird thing about this post-merge is we've had, what, like 4 or 5 post-merge episodes, and we've been to Island of the Idols twice, which is very odd. I think people said, like, people have been jockeying for these big title twists to get dropped, you know, at the merge, and we sort of got it here, at least, like, halfway so. But, Mary, you're still going to be our teacher this week, giving us some teaching moments that we can chew on, much like a delicious brunch with our loved ones. So what have you brought to teach us today?
Okay, well, I think this is the most apt thing I could teach everyone. So sometimes there are things you need to do, but for whatever reason, you don't prioritize getting around to them. Maybe you have annual work summaries coming up. Maybe you have to study for an exam. Maybe you agreed to write a fan fiction for a podcast over a year ago. Whatever that thing may be, maybe you came up with this idea in the last second as well before recording this podcast. As a person who has left every single paper I've ever written to the night before it was due and pulled an all-nighter, I think I'm exceptionally qualified to teach you guys how to procrastinate.
Ooh, I love this.
Yeah, so I have the top 4 tips here that I came up with like 20 minutes ago about how to procrastinate. And I think that they are applicable both to real life and to Survivor. So I'm very excited to teach you guys. Would you just say, starting off, that you are on a scale of 1 to 10, where are each of you on the procrastination scale?
I don't procrastinate. I'm one. Okay. I like, it makes me anxious to procrastinate. Like, this is actually going to be such a learning experiment for me. I'm like really excited to try this out. I have been told by multiple people to just chill out, and whoa, I think this is really going to help.
Oh, well, see, that's where you're wrong, because procrastinating does not make you chill out. It just makes you more anxious, but it tricks you into thinking that you're actually getting things done when you're not.
Oh, I like this. It's like some sort of, like, it's almost like a drug where you think you're riding a high that's really going to bring you down afterwards. I guess I'm sort of the goofus to Liana's Gallant from this perspective, but not by much. I guess I'd rate myself on a scale of 1 to 10, like, probably a 4 or 5. Like, I think my work ethic has gotten a lot better in my post-collegiate years. Ironically enough, being in college, like, I could very easily, you know, you were given that sort of mentality, right, of like, I'm young, my body is a fortress, I can stay up until 4 in the morning writing a paper that's due 2 hours from then. And so you didn't really need to fear any sort of repercussions behind it to be able to glide by on whatever, you know, you needed to do. But I think in the real world, that has become a little bit less of an excuse that you can utilize. So I sort of have disciplined myself to try to veer things back. I also have a weird memory. So it's one of those things where, like, I sort of have the mentality of, okay, I need to do something now or I'm going to forget about it. And then it's not just procrastinating, it's just outwardly, unintentionally ignoring the task at hand.
Well, you will definitely find tip number 2 useful then.
Ooh, hopefully I won't forget about tip number 2 then.
Yeah, so I would definitely put myself as probably around a 9 on the procrastination
scale.
Wow. I can't remember the last time when my New Year's resolution, or as I used to call them, revelations, wasn't to get better at procrastinating.
Wait, why did you call them? Did you like misspeak and call them revelations?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine. We don't need to discuss how old I was when I realized I was incorrect about that. I think that it's not to be procrastinating is not just sitting around and watching TV instead of doing your homework. It is purposefully adding other things into your schedule as well to prevent yourself from being able to get done what you really need to do. And you live a very stressful life, but it's I think it's key. So tip number one is to be fake productive in other areas. You know, many people find that when they're procrastinating from getting things done, that is the time that they most want to work out or clean the house or organize things. So, you know, instead of just rearranging your DVD shelf, I will do you one better. Move. Move somewhere ridiculously unnecessary and close by. I recommend like less than half a mile. I may or may not be in the process of doing this in my real life.
What?
May or may not have gotten the idea from my parents who moved six houses down the road.
What?
What?
So why?
You know, well, because how else can you procrastinate? The process of packing up all your stuff and then unpacking it allows you to clean two residences instead of just one. Accomplishment. As an added perk, you'll have a great excuse for why you can't get anything done because everything's in boxes. Your life's in shambles. And so, of course, you cannot get around to writing a fan fiction. Who has time for that? You're moving. You have serious things going on. I would like to throw into this category doing excessive sporting things. Like, let's say you want to run 100 miles. You can't get anything else that day done because you're out there running for 24 hours. And then you probably can't do anything for the next couple weeks because you're so sore and all your toenails have fallen off. So I recommend doing things that prevent you from being able to get other work done.
I feel like move is like the doctors hate him. One tip to, you know, like this is the catch-all.
Here's a life hack.
I love it.
Life hack to get rid of anxiety and all those, you know, household tasks you have piling up. Just move.
Just move.
That way you don't need to do them.
Yeah, exactly. Just move.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect. You don't have the time to fix that spot on the wall where you accidentally scuffed it. Just move to a new house.
Mm-hmm. So you could also, all right. Let me, deposit. So like, for example, you could be like, okay, you need to write thank you cards for the gifts you got for your birthday. But if you have a major surgery, then you'll be incapacitated and not able to fill out cards.
Now you're thinking like a true procrastinator. I think this has a really great Survivor application as well. You can, you know, you can't get anything done in Survivor until you build the shelter, right? So build a second shelter. Maybe you need to come up with an excuse for why you need to build a second shelter, like build the first one partially underground in a log cabin, or set fire to the first one mysteriously. Then you have to all work together building another shelter, and you can't do the things you actually need to do in Survivor, like make alliances and, you know, find idols.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could, I mean, so yeah, sabotage a shelter, but also all those other chores at camp, right? Just like start throwing away the bamboo, the coconuts, because then you got to keep doing it.
Right. You know, some people think that by hiding the machete and dumping out the rice, people are trying to sabotage the game. They're not. They're just trying to prevent everyone else from, you know, building alliances without them. They're holding everyone hostage because you can't get anything done until you have that survival comes first.
Oh,
you know?
I love this.
This is why they call it Survivor.
So like flood the camp. And that way everyone will sort of like have a conversation, like, because I know that when people are cooped up in the shelter together, like, it's very awkward and they can't really talk about anything besides small talks. You're almost, like you said, you're putting a chokehold on the game, but so it's that others won't sneak ahead of you.
Exactly. So that's tip number one.
I have a general question. Where do you rank putting up decorations for holidays in the terms of the procrastination scale? Because I very much feel like it's a thing where you do it, and then by putting up the decorations, essentially you're creating more work for yourself, because then you have to eventually, potentially, take them down.
So it's kind of depends what you're procrastinating for. Like, if you are procrastinating not wanting to put the Christmas tree up, then start messing up your house and just leaving things out, because it's impossible to put a Christmas tree up if your, you know, laundry is all over the floor in the living room. Uh-huh. So that's like a good way to do that. Whereas if you want to, you know, if you don't want to pay your bills, then you have to spend a day getting all the stuff out of the basement or the attic and putting it up. And then it's an added bonus. You get the second part, which is procrastinating from putting it away. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, Valentine's Day and your Christmas tree still up. Mm.
Or if you don't want to put up the tree, you could focus on converting to Judaism, where you wouldn't need to. And also, it's a comprehensive process, and you can learn about the whole bar mitzvah and the Torah portion that you need to read.
Yes, converting to a different religion is one of the best forms of procrastination.
Moving.
All right.
Converting to another religion. They're great.
Tip number two, the one that I said would help Mike if he's forgetting what he needs to do. Write to-do lists. I am a really big fan of the to-do list. My desk at work and inside my backpack are just full of sticky notes about things that I need to do maybe that day, maybe in the coming year, maybe 10 years from now. I don't know. And I, you know, for anyone who works in certain like technology or business or whatever, you may be familiar with the concept of like a sprint planning board mm-hmm. or a Kanban board, mm-hmm. which I have made for myself, like outside of work for fun on my wall. I have a really big one. And the beauty of it is, yeah, you'll put stuff up there that's like, write a fan fiction for RANAP, which doesn't ever get done. Or you could put other stuff up there like finish Glee or, you know, learn how to make beef stew, paint your nails, put a grocery list up there, and you will feel productive when you get to move things from the planned to the refined to the progress to the done column. And it's the quantity of things you're moving that make you forget that half of these things up here are like take a shower in the morning. And don't actually really progress your life in any meaningful way.
This is my kind of procrastinating. I'm all yes. in on tip two. I freaking love to-do lists. Oh, my God. I feel like I should make a to-do list for the rest of the podcast. This is so lovely.
Okay, but yeah, make a to-do list. But okay. I guess, yeah, you could go super granular, right? You could write down, like, breathe or, like, have lunch. You know, just as, like, I mean, some people actually do need reminders of that. Also, Mary, feel free to move finish Glee to like the refine or the progress. Like, honestly, I can tell you offline how it all ends. You do not need to watch it.
Oh, thank you. Perfect. Well, unfortunately, I have also added things like, you know, go back and watch all of Amazing Race because that's a priority, apparently. But, you know, when you have a book or a TV show that you put on a to-do list, all of a sudden it seems like a big accomplishment mm-hmm. and not just a way of procrastinating.
No, that's actually really true. Or just like normal things that you have to do every day as like a human being.
Oh, yeah. Paint my nails and laundry are two of the biggest ones that I put on my to-do list for things to do. But also things like check your mail yeah. or make sure you put gas in your car. That kind of thing. Bonus points if you add a peer review column for maximum procrastination, get someone else in on it. And then the survivor, you know, connection here is sometimes you are, in fact, given a pencil and paper on Survivor. So these are the best times to make yourself a to-do list of like people you need to check up on your daily rounds of, you know, checking in with everyone to do those little pop-ins. You know, you could write down the breath first search for immunity idols. That would be a good one. And when you don't have paper, pull a Nora and write in the sand and put leaves and sticks down.
Do you think Jamal should have come back from Island of the Idols and with a to-do list written down on that parchment of like, okay, guys, this is what Rob and Sandra said we needed to do. Number one is don't vote out Jamal, so I guess we have to do it.
Yeah, number two, build a new shelter. Number three,
convert to Judaism.
Convert to Judaism. Exactly. So, yeah, that's a great one to do in Survivor. Give everybody a to-do list so that they don't have time to do anything else. Is a really great way to procrastinate.
Maybe that's why Nora particularly was not a big fan of Karishma's work ethic, is because she was giving her to-do lists all the time and Karishma moved nothing from, you know, planned to progress.
Exactly. That's why it is. So please tweet at me with pictures of your personalized Kanban boards and the person who has the most menial tasks on there wins procrastination award.
I love it.
How long is it going to take for you to make that award?
Well, it depends. It could be a long time. You could do what I did, which was make a physical one out of poster board and put sticky notes on it and move those.
I think it depends what else Mary has going on in her life. If there's something else of critical importance she needs to do, this award will be done very quickly.
Yeah. Okay. Tip number three. Add activities into your life that you really don't have time for. This goes along with number one. Like, for example, maybe when you have decided to move and to run a marathon and start podcasting, maybe on top of that, decide to try out for a Christmas play, because that will take up all of your time and you will not have any time to do anything else. Acting is definitely a great form of procrastination. Make sure that this Christmas play also exists in a county very far away where you don't have like internet access, and so you can't get anything else done while you're at rehearsal. That's another great tip.
You know what?
These are not at all applicable to my real life.
If you move there, that would probably help you get to rehearsals more easily.
Yes. That's a practical move.
Yeah, you want to move.
Moving can't have any kind of practical reasons. It's all just to do it.
Well, or if you do move, you got to move further away, I think.
Right. Yeah. Then you have a longer commute.
Exactly. Mm.
That's great.
I would say I'm all in on number three, because I would say I love my son to death, but having a child is absolutely part and parcel. Tip number three here.
Yeah, that's an activity in your life that you really don't have time for, having a child. Start a podcast, play some online reality games, decide to do a full watch of The Challenge, because you've only started watching in the last two seasons, but you should probably go back and watch all 30-something, right?
Yeah. No, that's a good use of your time. You should actually probably procrastinate on that by doing the Glee watching.
Right. Well, yeah, and these things can stack. Like, I agreed over a year ago to convert all of my family's VHS tapes. But then you realize, okay, need to hunt down a VCR. Okay, need to hunt down a new camcorder that I got to buy on eBay that's going to play these old 8mm. Okay, now these things take up my space. Probably should move. Now they're packed up. Don't know where they are anymore. And plus, you know, I got to watch Glee and I can't do both at the same time. So
yeah, no, that's good.
Rachel Berry requires your undivided attention, Mary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Survivor application, make and plant fake hidden immunity idols all over the place, because no one has time for that. Sort all of your tribe mates into Hogwarts houses.
Ooh.
That might be a fun waste of your time. See how many pop culture quotes you can slip into confessionals before they demote you to a purple edit.
Oh, that's good.
That's another fun task.
I like that one.
Yeah.
Build a bowling alley, build a fish pole. I think there's a lot of different things that you can do.
Rock gardens,
yeah. Yes, that fall under the unnecessary activities category.
Yeah, I think these are all great. And if all else doesn't, if these don't work for you, if these seem like too much work and you need to do the truest form of procrastination, this is where you're going to like step number four, sleep.
Ah,
sleep's important. You know, we've discussed before on, I think, the Big Brother version of this podcast that I have the ability to sleep anywhere.
Have you pulled a Karishma and slept like sitting on a stool before?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I carry a towel around with me everywhere, beach towel. I was known for sleeping in places around my college campus. A few nights ago, actually, when I first moved into my new apartment, I locked myself out of my building by accident when I was going downstairs to get my final load. And I had to sleep in my car sitting there because I was too anxious to drive back. I had the keys to my old apartment, was too anxious to drive back there because what if someone opened the door and I could get in at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning? So, you know, sleep your time away. If you're going on a big trip, just sleep in the car and then you're there and you weren't able to actually get anything done. This is another one that I use a lot when like, okay, maybe I have to edit a podcast. I'll download it, put it on my laptop, get it all set up, get in the car. You know, if I'm driving with my parents to go to Thanksgiving somewhere, but then I just take a nap the whole time. Of course, I wasn't able to get anything done. You got to practice sleeping so that you're able to eat all the turkey.
Mm. Wait, so do you call nap practice sleep?
Yeah. Who doesn't?
Practice.
It's your practice sleep.
Wait, but what if you're more efficient if you sleep when you wake up?
Oh, well, no, because see, the way you go through these steps is you start with the sleep and then you wake up and then you make your to-do list and then you add in the, you know, step three activities you don't have time for. And then you, once you get to some of those activities, always start with the fake productive ones.
Right.
So it's really, I went a little out of order here, but they all, trust me, you will be able to stay in a nice little organized procrastination circle. And because then when you're done with all of your activities that you don't have time for, you're going to be too tired to do anything else. So you gotta go back to sleep.
Okay, I can definitely do two and four. I gotta find something for three. I'm not moving.
I'm just going to throw that out there. Although I will say there, the apartment next to me is open and it's a two bedroom, not a one bedroom. And I did consider moving into there. And is that, would that work, moving just one apartment over? Like I have to pack everything up to move just in my own building, one apartment over.
Yeah.
Okay.
I specifically moved into a building in a one bedroom apartment with the hopes that eventually a two bedroom would be open and then I can move into that one.
And Liana, if you have two apartments, that's more room to sleep.
Ah, that's great. Yes,
exactly.
I could sleep in both. Yeah.
So it all.
Yeah. So hopefully everyone can take some notes from this lesson. I think Liana's clearly learned some stuff, and then you can introduce this to your other players in Survivor. I think I could totally see Rob and Sandra teaching this lesson.
Yeah, on procrastination.
Well, they're procrastinating from their own lives right now. By
that's true.
That's the biggest form of procrastination.
Yeah, how much is working on that like monolithic shelter, you know, high in terms of like the productive but like ultimately, you know, unimportant tasks on his to-do list?
Well, and if you're like me and you have all of your social media set to pop open on Boston Rob's page, you will have followed on his Instagram that he spent a long time making a treehouse for his daughters, that he noted on there that he didn't think that his daughters necessarily even wanted, but that he wanted to build.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's classic number three, unnecessary activities.
Exactly. So Boston Rob, I think we've seen that he's a clear procrastinator, less so on Sandra, but she has implemented some of these activities in terms of, you know, keeping other people from being able to form correct strategies inside the game by, you know, tricking them into thinking that Michaela has eaten sugar and stuff. That's a nice little fun activity to do.
Interesting. Yeah. And I guess theoretically, the B&B has subscribed to like tip number three, right? It feels like we're providing a lot of unproductive, you know, time heavy activities for people to indulge in, specifically those that are on the line together to distract from whatever may be occurring outside of the microphone.
Yeah, this whole podcast for both myself and the listeners is an unnecessary activity. So classic number three.
Yeah, I'm over here sitting next to a stack of VHS tapes and a bunch of unpacked boxes. So this is clearly the best thing I could be doing with my time today.
Well, let's move on to another unnecessary activity.
All right, let me cross off my to-do list. Mary's lesson. Boom! Nailed
there
it.
There we go. Ugh. Feeling productive. All right, but not too productive. Got to feel right in that happy medium. Before we move on to more fun and games, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back, so let's keep on keeping on. Well, let's move on here to our first game this week. And no matter what you may have thought about this episode, you can't dispute the fact that so much of it centered around Nora. I even tweeted this out that this might be one of the like one episode character highlight episodes that we have seen in quite some time. It was almost shades of when a coach went to Exile Island and then got booted from the game in Survivor Token Sheens, where so much seemed to focus around her. And lover or hater, it was a Nora filled episode. So I thought I'd bring back something that I did all the way back in episode two when Nora was, you know, similarly on the chopping block, called Do You Nora Nora? How it works is I'll just be asking some multiple choice questions about what Nora did this episode. And it's up to you guys to determine. We'll go back and forth. Who knows more about Nora? Before we get into it, Mary, what are your thoughts about Nora overall?
Wait, oh, I need a clarification. Is the game called Do You Nora Nora?
No,
do you Noah Nora?
No, K-N-O-W-R-A, Nora. Do you know Nora? Okay. Nora.
That makes more sense. I was trying to figure out what the pun was originally. So.
Yeah, those are the best puns, okay. The ones that you need to figure out.
Okay, thank you.
It's no bi, alpha, bi, girl, bi.
Alpha, bi, girl, bi.
Yeah, yeah.
But Mary, what are your thoughts on Nora before we get into all of her shenanigans from this episode?
I loved Nora from the very start. I think I fell in love with Nora in her first one out recording when she could not stop talking and putting her hands on the table. I knew that this was somebody that I needed to follow. I think a lot of people like to make comparisons between Nora being like a Debbie or a Coach or whatever. I think she is completely unique in every way. I have never seen someone who is just like, she admits and she knows that she's unusual and she's just completely okay with it. None of it seems like an act.
No,
at all.
Well, Mary, remember, like, she never wants to stick in.
Right. Yeah. She likes to stick out. And I agree that she is the best. I'm going to start trying to study at the School of Nora and learn how I can also not stick in.
Yeah, Nora is just so unapologetically Nora. Like, even when if she's going to apologize, it's still unapologetic somehow. Just that in true insanity is amazing. It's so inspiring.
Her comment about being like Karishma but fun to hang out with is one of the best lines I've ever seen.
Right in front of Karishma. So funny.
Oh, don't worry. We will get into that. We'll be much like Karishma. Like, okay, I'll start with the future, but then I'll go back to the beginning.
Yeah.
And let's go back to... go ahead.
And that's the other thing I've got to say. So I have been known my whole life of not knowing... This will come as a shock to no one. Not knowing how to summarize anything. You know, like back in elementary school, when you got those pieces of paper, would be like, write three sentences and they would have lines drawn in. I would always write like in the margin, down the corner, on the back of the page, writing around there. I like to speak.
Is that where you write your to-do list?
Oh, yeah. I like to speak and tell stories like to my friends and family as if I'm giving a TED talk where it's like, okay, now I'm going to make 5 points. Point number one is going to be this. Point number two, my mom told me I speak in a 5-paragraph essay. So I really, really identified with Nora and I love that. And I want to bring that back into my life of telling people, starting giving them like a little flash forward into where I'm going to get into the conversation later, but then going back.
Yeah, so you want to use what the editors did in the beginning of the season, right? With the flash forwards of stuff instead of previously on?
Yeah. Yeah, it would be great to be on Survivor and use that in terms of just like a conversation. People walk down the beach and say, okay, so now I have a plan that I'm going to do in 3 episodes. I plan on forming an alliance with this person, but hold on, we're going to flashback. This is where we are now, so yeah. Let's start laying the groundwork.
Oh, that's so good.
All right, so let's start off. Liana, we'll start with you, because this is about not Liana, but Lana, Nora's sister who visited her. And Mary, I know that you bear-tackled us, very similar to how Lana approached Nora, as they were very happy to see one another. And I will say, Jeff had a very sweet moment with bringing Lana down as his co-pilot in the beginning of the challenge. But when Nora and Lana were talking with Jeff, Nora used 3 phrases to describe herself, besides the whole Nora mole thing, which was not one of these phrases. A, I'm crazy. B, I'm flighty. C, I'm impulsive. D, I'm Nora.
I think B, flighty.
That is correct. She did say she was crazy, she's impulsive, and she's Nora.
She is Nora.
I think she could have just said, I'm Nora, yeah. And we would have understood all the other ones.
It all falls under that purview.
But that was like her 5-paragraph essay, right? Like, that was her conclusion, was that she was Nora.
Her summary statement.
It was great. Oh, I need Nora to start doing TED Talks.
Yes.
I don't know what about.
Well, that's the thing. Anything. Like, we need Nora in the final tribal council, right? Like, we need her to bring this montage discussion that she had back at camp in front of a jury for her to convince them why. She would legitimately, like a TED Talk, I'm sure, stand up and start pacing around the fire at tribal council to talk to the jury.
I would love to see the Survivor editing of in a final tribal council speech, just jumping ahead to things that she's saying. That's like the coach poem, like that, but in realistically talking about her game and just edit out as if she's going on for 20 minutes. That would be so great.
Montages are your friend here.
Oh, love it.
All right. Well, Mary, we're going to you here. After not getting picked for the reward, Nora goes onto a rant back at camp, calling herself, as you mentioned, the Karishma of the Vokai Alliance, quote, but I'm actually enjoyable to be around, which is funny, but also like, God, poor Karishma. Man, this is like indicative of what she suffered in terms of people talking crap about her in front of her face. Like, damn, that really sucks. But she went on. Which of the following did she not use to also differentiate herself from Karishma? A, I cut up coconuts. B, I'm funny. C, I gave up rewards. D, I'm warm.
Man, she does do all of those things. I think I'm going to go with cut up coconuts. I know that she does that, but I don't remember her mentioning it.
Mary, always go with the coconuts. Its answer is D, I'm warm.
Ah, man, that seems like something that she would have said, though.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, listen, like, when in doubt, Nora's going to mention or do something with coconuts at every point in time.
Gosh, that, she kind of love
okay,
Nora.
Yeah, so that was the other thing I noticed. She was always carrying coconuts. They went to go look for the idol. She was carrying coconuts. She just like wanders into the background when she was talking with Dean, carrying coconuts. Like, I'm pretty sure that's like Nora's sole purpose in life also is just like, coconut, I have to have it. Coconut, I have to have it. I love it.
I think part of it is that she feels like she needs a prop. You know, like if I was out there, I would feel the same way. Like I need to be doing something at all time. I think her carrying the coconut is just like the fidget spinner of Survivor. It's something that she can have.
And Nora is an entrepreneur. Maybe she felt like she can market something with coconuts to keep your hands busy.
It's great. I mean, Nora knows best, and Nora knows always carry a coconut.
Maybe it's like the stress ball of Survivor. It's just a big old coconut you can grasp in your palm.
Yeah.
All right. So, Liana, back to you. What does Nora admonish Dan for not doing any longer? Saying, quote, where's the love, man? Does Dan not, A, give her eye contact anymore? B, shake her hand anymore? C, check in with her before the vote anymore? Or D, talk with her about her family anymore?
Ooh, I don't remember this one. I'm going to go with C.
I'm sorry, she's pissed off that Dan does not make eye contact with her anymore.
Oh, I missed that one.
I just love her quote of like, where's the love, man?
Yeah, where's the love? And we all know love comes through eye contact.
Well, I actually experienced this firsthand. When I was interviewing her, I was asking her a question and she was looking up at the canopy and she stopped herself. She's like, I need to bring it down here. I can't be looking up there. I got to keep it here. I got to spread the love. So like, I understand that. Like, I guess this is really important to Nora. Maybe even more important than gathering coconuts is eye contact. Mm-hmm. She also told me when I asked her, like, you know, who would be a strong ally just at the outset, she says, well, anyone who I made eye contact with, I really trust.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
She really, really needs that eye contact.
I mean, I guess
I'm just known as being someone who I have to like mentally remind myself to make eye contact when I'm talking with people, because I tend to just like people watch, scan the room if there's other things going on. I'm not like on my phone when someone's talking, but I feel really awkward looking at people, because then I find myself just like looking at their mouth moving, and then you start wondering like, wow, that's weird that words are formed in that way, you know? And so I just get like sidetracked very easily when I make eye contact.
It seems like an attention span problem.
Yeah, this is very possible.
That is interesting. Like, could you imagine Nora's like, Dan doesn't look me in the mouth anymore, and it's really annoying.
Yeah. That's rough.
All right.
And then where, you know, what's the courtesy move when you're podcasting? Am I supposed to like stare straight at the computer when I'm talking to someone? Do I have to look at your little picture? Can I look around other places?
If you look at our little picture, you have to look us in the eye though.
Yeah. See, that's hard. That's hard. Even in my little picture, I'm not even making eye. I'm looking to the side. I'm not even looking at the camera.
Yeah. You're not even looking at the lens, the camera eye.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Sorry. Well, Mary, we're sticking with you here, so all eyes on you. I don't know if you're staring back at them, but we then get a montage of Nora's speech where she gives remarks on several players. She does like a sort of mini roast where she's just lambasting the hell out of her tribe mates. What does she not talk about? A, Janet is sheepish. B, Kelly has a lot of plans. C, Tommy hasn't made a move of his own. D, Lauren has not done shit since day one.
Oh, those all sound familiar. I was waiting for the one that didn't. I definitely remember her talking about Kelly at some point. It's down between Tommy and Lauren, maybe, because they're such a pair. Would she have mentioned both of them? I guess I'll go with Lauren.
I'm sorry, it was Tommy.
So close.
Yeah, well, you know how much work ethic means to Nora, so of course she would want to call out Lauren for not doing anything. But yeah, the Kelly thing was the best because she mimes Kelly having a lot of plans by doing like a Mr. Burns tenting her fingers and looking around.
As one does when they're making their plans.
Yeah, I think she's got it wrong. When you make your plans, you pull out the old trusty pencil
right.
and paper.
Gotta do that to-do list.
Well, now yeah. I think, you know, the value of rewatching this season is to see if Machia Kelly is a thing, as Nora is really pointing out here. All right.
Wow. I'm really sad to be finding out that I don't Nora.
All that well.
Nora.
Yeah, the best puns are also the ones that you can't really pronounce very well and that you're very unsure about pronouncing correctly.
Oh.
All right, Liana, we're going back to you here. So we're going to keep going on Nora's speech because there's a lot of stuff that happens here. What is something that Nora does not do through the rest of her speech? A, swing a surrender flag above her head. B, say she was literally punched in the face. C, talk about uplifting her partners to the point where they get with their exes. D, mind being thrown under a bus.
Oh, man. Okay. I don't know if I know this one. What were A and B again? What surrender flag?
Swing a surrender flag above her head and say she was literally punched in the face.
Oh, man. I'm gonna go with A.
I'm sorry, it was D.
Oh, what? Oh.
Yeah, so Nora swung...
Yeah, I Nora'd that one.
Nora swung a surrender flag and that she swung like a purple top above her head. And it was great to the point where the camera actually panned up to show her swinging this weird purple lasso. She said that the family visit, she said she's loyal to a fault, and the fault literally punched her in the face. And then she said that she's such an uplifting person that often the people she's with, she'll push them up so much that it allows them to leave her and go back to their exes.
Okay, that one I remember.
Can we just stop down on that one for a second? What she uplifts people that they crawl back to their exes?
Is this like a Jason reference? Remember? Like,
yeah.
Didn't he remind her?
Jason, go back to my cousin.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to use that next time. If I ever get dumped again, I'm just going to say, you know what? I've uplifted them so much that they went back to their ex.
Yes, it's
a positive
such a
thing.
Great job. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you could turn sort of a breakup into a positive there, right? Like, oh, no, they didn't break up with me because, you know, we weren't compatible. It was because I lifted them up so much that they thought, oh, yeah, I am such a good person. And they decided to pursue a different choice.
Exactly.
I just want to see the world through Nora's eyes. This is such a great way to look at everything.
As long as you're looking back into those eyes, I think you'll be okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mary, we have to talk about the reticular activation system that
yes.
Nora has brought up when she was looking for the idol. So she brings up the reticular activation system where she says, okay, if we keep saying blue, eventually it's going to pop up. We see Nora look in one particular place for the idol after announcing the reticular activation system. Where does she look? A, in the well, B, behind the tribe flag, C, underneath the shelter, D, in the ocean.
Wait, is only one of these true?
She only looked in one of these places.
Oh, man. Why? I remember her pointing at something and saying, this is blue, and I want to say it was the tribe flag, but then I also have an image of her in the well. Oh, no, that's because that's when she was picking the bugs out of the well. That's right. Okay, yeah, I'm going to go with the tribe flag.
Yeah, you fell for my... You staved away my trick. That was correct. I feel like Boston Rob, you passed the test. Yeah, she did indeed look behind the tribe flag saying, this is blue. Just sort of reached behind just a hanging tapestry thinking that the idol was going to be there.
Yeah. And I was just reading this whole article about how blue is not a color that actually really exists in nature, and like how the world came up with the color blue. And so, I think this reticular activation system is a very strong way to look for something if you know that it's going to be blue.
Okay, so the reticular activating system, of course, my like science brain immediately popped off. I was like, what is this? Okay, so first of all, let me tell you actually what it is. So it's just part of the neural system that controls sleep and your fight or flight response. So that's it. It's just like, you know how you have electrical wiring in your house? Well, you have electrical wiring in your body. That's called your brain and your nervous system. It's just a part of that. Okay, that's it. That's all it is. However, the internet thinks that it is some magical, amazing secret. So when I was reading about this, there's this one video called "The Reticular Activating System Proves the Law of Attraction Works." Okay.
Oh.
It's a 21 minute video, which I did not watch, but the first 2 minutes are amazing. It opens like it's some movie trailer. So it's like, for generations, the greats have been utilizing the secret. And then it just pops up pictures of Beethoven, Lincoln, Emerson, Edison, they all just like
Scarlett Johansson as Lucy.
Yeah, right. Like Einstein, just like all the secrets have been using it. And it's like, but now like the secret will become uncovered. And then there's this like knight who's hiding this parchment. And then I think he gets killed at some point. Like the secret was buried and there's like a shot of the pyramids. It's so incredibly dramatic. I just absolutely had to bring this up. So it's 2 minutes long. If anybody wants to watch it, I will tweet it out. But then it just, after the very exciting trailer, it cuts to this guy just like from an MLM selling like some random webinar.
Well, they hooked you from the beginning.
I was hooked by the beginning. It was the most bizarre thing I think I've ever watched. What this has to do with the law of attraction, like I have no idea, because I didn't want to get sucked into the MLM, although maybe that could become my unnecessary activity. Anyway, wow, what a wild ride I went on. And I can't believe that Nora would subscribe to this. So I would very much, if and when she is voted out, love to hear more about her belief in the reticular activating system. Maybe she's part of this group. I don't know.
It really is Mount Rushmore, Beethoven, Emerson, Nora.
Yeah. I mean, we're really talking about the greats here.
Oh my God. How do they even know that they use the reticular activating system? Beethoven was alive like 500 years ago.
No, it's one of those things where it's like all the greats and then they just flash a picture. So it's like they didn't actually say it. We didn't say Beethoven used the reticular activating system. Okay. It's like heavily implied, but not explicitly stated.
Well, maybe that's the reticular activating system, is if you keep flashing a picture of Beethoven, you're going to get Beethoven in your mind and you're going to be attracted to him.
I mean, maybe, but no matter who you are, or no matter where you are, you too can uncover the secret.
Oh, wait, is that the secret? Do we think the secret might be the reticular activation system?
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, man, that would be a plot twist, wouldn't it?
So, wait, Liana, from your science expertise, the reticular activation system is literally just using your brain,
yes,
though?
Yes, okay. There's nothing special about, I mean, it's just part of your neural system. It's like your arm or your leg is just a part of your body, or at least that's the technical definition. So
is that part of the like 90% of our brain that supposedly we don't know how to
yeah,
use?
Maybe that's what it is. And then she's just tapping into the higher level of brain activity.
Yeah.
Oh, I would love this like spinoff of, what was it, Limitless, that Bradley Cooper movie,
yes,
where Nora gets offered the pill before she goes on to Survivor. Maybe that's why she's like all over the place.
Yeah, that could be the case.
Like, she's galaxy braining this season.
I'm trying to decide if I think that actually does make more sense or not. Somehow I think it does.
Considering how she might not know how math works later on, maybe it doesn't prove the theory.
Yeah, indeed.
All right. So, unfortunately, despite using the reticular activation system like the greats, apparently, Nora does not find the idol. Elaine does. Liana, when Elaine finds the idol, what do we not see Nora doing in response? A, dancing. B, jumping up and down. C, screaming. D, holding coconuts.
Oh, I mean, she had to have been holding coconuts, because that's Nora is just always holding coconuts. I'm going to go with that she was not dancing.
That is correct. Jason's ban mm-hmm. has still taken hold even in his absence.
Well, you know, it was at least a Survivor time ban. Maybe it lifts after she leaves.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens at the reunion. Maybe she still can't dance even if she wins.
I would like to see her being able to hold Coconut, scream, jump up and down, and dance at the same time.
Yeah, that would be pretty impressive.
Well, listen, if she took that pill, I think she'd be able to and more.
Mm. Well, that's like the next level, patting your head. Or no, what is it? Patting your head and rubbing your stomach at the same time.
Yeah.
Can I do it? Oh, yeah, I can do it. Oh,
nice. you would have had to learn to how to do that to your to-do list.
Oh my gosh, I think I've unleashed the secret.
That's another thing, just back on that real quick. I have a to-do list of podcasts to listen to, obviously, because it's one thing to just look in your podcast catcher and see all the podcasts. It's another thing to write it down on a piece mm-hmm. of paper. But sometimes I will forget to write it down on the paper and I'll listen to a podcast and then it will feel like I haven't achieved as much as if I had written it down and checked it
off.
No,
I feel that. I totally get you.
All right, Mary, we're going back to you. We have a question in your queue as well as a myriad of podcasts. Nora compares her situation to a piece of fiction, saying, quote, "They could promise you the sun and the moon and wine and dine you, make you feel great, then they're gonna freaking get you." What is that work? A, The Godfather. B, Lord of the Flies. C, The Jungle Book. D, Treasure Island.
Does she mention the name of the thing?
She does.
In there? Okay, I'm making sure this wasn't knowledge that I needed to have of figuring out where that quote came from. I do believe it's Lord of the Flies, though.
Yes, that is correct. Nora's book club is in session, and apparently Lord of the Flies is about whining and dining children.
Yeah. Can I just say, this is much easier to pick which thing Nora did do than which thing she didn't do for me. So
you like that format better. Wow. Yeah. It's been a long time since I've read Lord of the Flies. I don't think that that's what it's about.
No, but I was waiting for her to say something about how she was piggy and then she didn't. So I do remember that.
Yeah, unlike Lord of the Flies, I feel like a pig head with flies covered on it that has a mythical voice talking for it. Maybe that's sort of like Nora's like, I don't know, mentor in the game.
I like to think that multiple times throughout the season, Nora has been talking and people walk up to her and say, hey, you don't have the conch shell. You can't talk.
Right. That's how you control her.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing, is Nora grabbed the conch shell as soon as she came back to camp and like wouldn't let it go for hours at a time. So they couldn't do anything.
Right.
Oh, maybe it's inside the coconuts.
Oh, that's why she's always carrying them. Yeah.
Yeah. The conch shell is the coconut.
She always has the conch shell.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Liana, back to you. To figure out the numbers behind the vote, Nora constructs a rudimentary diagram, which is just an amazing image. Mm-hmm. What does she not use to make this diagram? Leaves, sticks, rocks, or pieces of coconut?
Now, I do know that Nora loves coconuts. However, I'm pretty sure she used the leaves and the rocks. I'm going to say there were no pieces of coconut.
That is correct. Yes, surprisingly, and maybe Nora did not want to sacrifice her precious coconuts, mm-hmm. but if you look at the diagram, like a screenshot of it, like it's actually pretty darn adorable. Like there are little leaves. She even like carved letters into them to represent people, but I loved it. I just loved everything about Nora this episode, including the diagram that she made to actually figure out a 3-2-2-1 possible vote.
To be fair, like as a visual learner myself, I get having to map it out, but it wasn't that complicated.
All right, Mary, we're going to tribal council here. So Nora has various, I think, breakdowns during the course of tribal council when Dean whispers to Tommy that Nora was going to vote for him. And this is your favorite type of question. What does she not do in this breakdown? A, deny contemplating voting out Tommy. B, reveal that Elaine has an idol. C, claim she was going to tell Tommy the quote-unquote ruse before Dean did. D, say she is 110% never going to work with Dean. So she did three of those.
What was A?
A was deny contemplating voting out Tommy.
Did she deny? I know she also said that she did contemplate it. And what was D?
D was say she's 110% never going to work with Dean.
Yeah, I'm going to... this is tricky. I think it's one of those two, A or D. I'm going to go with D.
A was the correct answer.
That's a trick, because she did also admit to doing it.
That's the thing. So that was the one thing she didn't do, was deny it. When Lauren and Tommy approached her, all she replied with was, "When it's presented, you consider it."
Yeah.
Which, Nora! But I love, why did she have to reveal that Elaine had an idol? What does that have to do with anything? I feel so bad for Elaine in that moment.
Well, it's when you've been caught and you've got to throw a bone out
there. Yeah, distraction. You're just a kid who gets caught, right? And you're Tommy, did you eat all the chocolate? I was like, yeah, but Elaine dragged mud on inside. So, it doesn't actually absolve you of anything. But, you're just hoping that, if someone else gets in trouble, that
you're dragging someone down with
you.
Yeah,
exactly.
Can I just say, in your childhood example there, I was like, oh, she pulled Elaine in. That's so nice that she included a survivor's name, not realizing Tommy is also one. So
I was trying to think of names other than survivor contestants, but, the creative part of my brain apparently has decided to turn off today. So we're just going with the most immediate names I can think of.
Well,
it sounds like maybe if you joined a Christmas play, that creative side of your brain would pop back up.
I also like that Nora did use the term ruse to describe the plan. That's such a 1920s term from The Sting, that she's bringing back into the vernacular.
It was
something
that maybe Detective Dean brought it up, perhaps.
Well, speaking of Detective Dean, Liana, let's go back to you. Dean. When everyone sits down, Jeff says, Nora, you were the instigator. And I think Nora very accurately points out that, no, Dean was the instigator behind this. He's the one who whispers to Tommy. Mm-hmm. Dean laughs in response to him. What does Nora call him after he laughs? A, pretty. B, dodgy. C, sleazy. D, smiling.
Oh, I'm pretty sure this was... Was this the... Don't let pretty Dean fool you or something like that. I'm going to go with pretty.
You were correct.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was great. Pretty Dean. I'm just speaking my truth.
It's very like Derek Zoolander and Hansel of stop it. You're so hot. My enemy is so gorgeous and I hate it.
It's just too pretty. We can't combat the pretty.
Oh, and I love her calling him Dean pretty as well. I think that's very cute.
Mm hmm.
Honestly, I think a Dean-Nora showmance would have been very fun.
Aw, that would have been explosive. Can you imagine? Oh, that would have been so funny. I loved it when Dean was like, no, I trust you the least.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Dean and Nora are both not great players in this episode. And that's why I think it's so fun to watch them together, because Dean's oddly enough, the straight man to Nora.
Yeah.
And even he is the crazy one to everyone else's straight man.
Well, if there was a Dean and Nora romance, then Dean would have ended up getting back together with Kelly's friend.
Yeah. Nora would have uplifted him so much.
Oh my gosh. We solved the problem.
All right, Mary, as the votes were coming in, there were a few votes for Nora, but most of them were for Karishma. What did Nora not say to either the other people around her or to herself as these votes were coming in? A, I knew she was playing it, and this was in reference to when Elaine played her idol. B, we just regained our power. C, thank God. D, come on.
There's a lot of shows I watch with subtitles on. This Tribal Council was not one of them. Let's go with we've regained our power. I don't know.
No, believe it or not, Nora did say that.
Okay.
She did not say thank God. I believe as the votes were coming in, she said, I believe when Elaine played her idol, she whispered to Dan, I knew she was going to do that, which, great. I believe when the first vote came in for Karishma, she then told Dan, we just regained our power. And then a couple of votes came.
Yeah, the power that they only lost because Nora might have flipped on them.
No. This was Nora again, trying to pull her own ruse, as it were, trying to pull the wool, be like, oh, thank God, guys, we just regained our power. That was certainly tough.
Nora creating all all of the situations why these things happen. She knew that Elaine played it because she shouted out to everyone that that Elaine had an idol. This doesn't count as correctly predicting things.
Yeah, like you can't make something happen and then be like, oh, see, I told you it was going to happen. It's like, you did that.
Like, if you yell like, hey, to somebody and they look at you like, oh, I knew you'd look at me.
I knew you'd
like,
turn around.
Like, yes, you caused that event to happen. And then as the votes were coming in for her, she said, come on. She was very angry, I guess. But no, she did not let out a thank God. But Nora lives to see another day. And if she provides nearly as many activities and entertainment as she was able to do this episode, then we should feel so uplifted to the point where we get back with all of our ex-partners, I suppose.
Very inspirational.
And congratulations, Liana, by a score of 4-2. You, Nora, a little better than Mary.
I don't know about the puns, but we're here for it all. Okay, so I want to talk about something I was very much inspired by, speaking of inspirational. So when Janet's husband came out to see her in this episode during the family visit, he was wearing a pink shirt, indicating that, no, we are not having a girl, despite the fact that that's what Janet said. That is her daughter, so they're having a granddaughter, because I was very much confused initially. But what I said was inspirational is I love this concept of like wearing a clothing item if you're a family member to convey some sort of message. So the example that I was thinking was, what if Thunder D came out wearing a skull and crossbones? And that's how he indicated that grandma had died to Johnny Fairplay. Ooh.
Or if he pulls like a Willy Wonka and walks out with a cane and then throws the cane away and does like a tumble to mime out what could have happened to grandma.
Like what? Yeah, exactly. Like what are the types of things that either maybe previous loved ones could have done, or what would you do to try to convey a particular message? Because I think like, I think you could really go for it. Like you could be really creative. What if you're applying to clown school? You come out wearing a red nose showing that you got in. I don't know. Things like that.
I will also say before we get into it fully that I love Janet's husband, John. They are hashtag couple goals. But also, wouldn't it be kind of funny if like he didn't purposely wear a pink shirt? He just happened to like throw a white shirt in with all the you know, the red stuff from all the other family members, and it just happened to turn pink, and that's the only thing he could wear.
Yeah, right. Oh, man, what a faux pas that would have been. Or if you wanted to do a true like gender reveal, right, he should have come out with the white shirt on, pulled off to reveal the pink shirt, right? Or potentially, I don't know, could he wear a balloon? And then he's like encased in a balloon.
Nope. The answer is yes. Don't even go any further. The answer is yes. He could absolutely wear a balloon and pop it to reveal the gender of the granddaughter.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And then they're like covered in confetti. Oh, that'd be good.
Can I just also real quick, the thing about Johnny Fairplay's grandmother in Thunder D, I don't know if they needed the shirt, because wasn't the whole point that him being there was what conveyed that his grandmother had died? Because otherwise it was going to be his grandmother.
Okay, yeah, but you get what I mean, right? You know, and also,
yeah, I think there's a lot of things. Like maybe you just want to convey what movie you watched on the plane over here.
Yes.
So you wear a shirt with that. That would have been great for Christian's girlfriend, right? Because that's all he cared about.
She comes out wearing an Avengers t-shirt and you're like, that's what you watch. Got it. Thanks for the t-shirt.
Would she have like bought that ahead of time, or would she have bought it when she landed in Fiji? Like, I gotta find some Avengers merch. That's how I can send a signal to Christian.
Yeah, it must have been when she would have landed, because how would she have known? Is there any way to look up what movies are going to be on airplanes ahead of time?
Yeah, I think you can. Well, okay. Here's the thing, though, because maybe about sending a message, like maybe you want to spoil certain things for the other people, you know. Ooh. So like you could wear like a t-shirt that has Avengers Endgame spoilers on it. So if, you know, this cast hadn't seen it, then you fly out there and then you're like, oh, hey, yeah, I saw this movie. By the way, this happened. And like they're forced to look at it and have to deal with it without even knowing it.
Yeah, I actually didn't even think about that. Not conveying a loved one or a message to your loved one necessarily, but to all the other contestants that are on the season. So, you know, it could be like, I'm with Stupid, arrow pointing at your loved one. And
yeah,
then
or like net worth $2 billion with an arrow pointing up at yourself.
Or no, I think you would want to go less, right? Because no one would want to, you know, I don't know, whatever.
No, because people want to take a rich person in the end, right? Because they don't think that they'll win.
Of course, they can be like, aha, psych, it was a ruse. I don't know what else.
Or you just have a, you just wear a shirt with a picture of a goat on it and be like, I, you know, they're a goat.
Subliminal
goat.
Messaging. Take also, them, just yeah. try to like, oh, yeah. see, you associate these two things together. Pattern recognition. Maybe a picture of the guy from the reticular activating system
yeah.
video.
Maybe what you could do is put like Beethoven's picture on your chest and Emerson on your back, and then you just like really flash it in their mind so that everyone's remembering it, and Jeff is going to make mention of it at tribal council.
Yes, exactly. Some donuts, perhaps. Like if you really want to like, ooh, let's, you know, mess with them. You could be at home watching Survivor eating donuts. Don't you want to give up? Like
a picture of Applebee's.
Oh, yes. Applebee's, of course. Classic Applebee's. What other messages would you want to convey? Let's see. Babies, deaths, marriages. Perhaps you could come out in a wedding dress. No.
Or divorces.
Divorces.
You could come out with like a shirt that says like, hey, by the way, Kathy separated from Steve. Like just in case, like, you know, that this person really liked Kathy and like, hey, she has an open chance for $1 million winner.
That's right. Yeah. Be the bearer of bad news. I think the more stupid or like, you know, the less important the message, I think the better. Also, that could be funny.
Well, I'm trying to think of something that if I was on Survivor that I would really care about knowing when I got there, like, maybe like a royal wedding announcement. Yeah, you know, maybe I really wanted to know how many Twitter followers I have.
Ooh, okay, so I like that.
That's something you need constant updates
on.
So
a screenshot of your Twitter dashboard, that could be a good one. For the royal wedding thing, could you come out wearing a screen that just runs the royal wedding on loop for anyone who's interested?
That would be great. Or like the big game, whatever the big game is.
Yes, the big game.
You know,
well, honey, I know you really wanted the big game. So
yes, of the sports. I think little things like that could be really funny. Let's see. I broke the carafe to my coffee maker this week, so maybe I would just have a picture of like the broken coffee maker and be like, "Sorry, honey, I broke it. Like, better win $1 million because we need to buy a new one."
Oh, wearing an outfit made of cardboard and portray that you have moved.
Yes. Ooh, I like that.
Or maybe it can represent one of your unnecessary activities. Like maybe you've decided to go into horse riding. So you come out in with your riding crop and your jockey outfit and whatnots. And, you know, like that could be a thing.
Or you could come out in your Glee shirt and then just talk all about the plot lines that you experienced from a show that ended like 5 years ago.
Or
come out holding the conch shell and then not let anyone else speak.
Oh,
you have the floor.
Here's the thing. Come out just dressed like Jeff Probst and then usurp his position.
Oh, I actually really like that one. What if you walked out dressed like Jeff Probst and then just started doing that thing that children do and also myself when I'm annoyed, where you just mock the other people?
Yeah.
Be like, so, you know, Tommy, how does it feel seeing your loved one out there? So, Tommy, how does it feel seeing your loved one out there?
Yeah, or like speak like a second after him and just say the exact same things, trying to copy him.
Right, yes, exactly. And then just see what happens. You only get, you know, we only have one life, okay? So if mocking and mimicking Jeff Probst is, I think, one of the priorities, like, you just gotta go for it.
Oh, all right, here's what you can do then. To get everybody on your side, hide a bunch of hot wings in your pants. And then when you walk out there, drop your pants and throw the wings everywhere and everyone's going to go scrambling and frantic. And it's going to take like 15 minutes to corral everybody.
OK, is hot wings the appropriate food to be hiding in your pants?
As opposed to what?
I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think, what is the optimal food that one is not going to get hot sauce all over you?
I mean, it's better than like baked beans.
I don't even know how you would do that. I think they need to be like discrete units of things. I mean, I guess beans are too, but
like casseroles?
What? Yes, you have. That's what cargo shorts are for. They're slices of casserole. And then you just like, yeah, yeah. You're just like tossing casserole.
Yeah, you do like, there's like a t-shirt cannon. Yeah, like, you get casserole. Who wants casserole?
Yay. And then there's just like utter chaos. Yeah, I think that's good.
And then you whisper to Jeff Probst, you say, this is my show now. I have him eating out of the palm of my hand. Soon they'll be going for the hot wings in my underwear.
Oh, man.
What if they all came out? You know, this could be a thing that Mike could start. Just coming out with a shirt depicting which soup you are. And then it would convey to everyone else which soup alliance you're in.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. That makes things much more clear. I think that's actually necessary.
Yes, it makes things very clear when you walk out with a shirt that just has a picture of a bowl of soup on it. Everyone gets that message immediately.
Especially because I think there's a lot of soups that kind of look similar. So then if you have to explain it, that's even better. Oh, man. Okay. All right. Well, that's enough of that nonsense. Let's move into some more nonsense with our last game that we're going to play. Casuals Corner, bringing it back. Okay, so after seeing Twitter's response, I was very curious to know what Facebook's response was to this episode and the season in general. So I have pulled comments from the Survivor Facebook page, and we're going to have two different formats of questions, but we're going to start with this format, which is which one got more likes. So I wanted to try to get a sense of what were the prevailing opinions of the casuals on the Facebook page. So I think these questions will give us a good sense of those opinions. Okay, so Mike, this first question is going to be for you. This is about Boston Rob and Sandra. So again, the format is which one got more likes. So I'll read two comments and you have to decide which one got more likes. All right. Comment A. I would like to see Rob and Sandra get a vote at the end for the winner. Or B, can't they vote out Rob and Sandra? Everything they awkwardly try to interject is so rehearsed.
Ooh. So I guess the question is, how do the casuals feel about Boston Rob and Sandra being on the season? See, I feel like maybe if this was the pre-merge, B would have gotten more likes because they were featured in every episode. But personally, I feel like they've gotten so innocuous that I can't imagine people would be motivated to really, you know, support the opinion of like, oh, let's get rid of them. They have annoying interjections. So I'm going to say A had more likes.
That is correct. A had more likes. That one had 57 likes to only 14 for the other one. So it seems like people are in general pretty ambivalent on Boston Rob and Sandra. Although I guess 57 people thought that they should get a vote at the end for the winner, which we'll see.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. This episode, you know, again, we didn't see Rob and Sandra until they were in the Jimmy Fallon hidey hole. And I love Boston Rob's Homer Simpson-esque loud whispering to Sandra as to what's going on. This episode when he's like, Nora got caught in a lie, and I think she's trying to recover from it.
Yeah, I love Boston Rob telling Sandra what's happening as Sandra also watches and knows what's going on. Like, not a whole lot of commentary there, but I appreciate the reiteration.
Well, it's very equivalent, though, because I think we had said from the beginning, like, oh, Rob and Sandra almost serving like audience analogs here. And this feels very akin to like a viewing party you might have where you're watching with somebody who's like trying to digest what's going on, or they're not entirely sure what's happening. So they need to like regurgitate it back to somebody of like, okay, I'm pretty sure this is what's happening right now. And yeah, it's not the most in-depth opinion, but I think it really shows how these are honestly just, they know the game, you know, and know about half the players at this point. But right now it's just two people watching the show and commenting on it.
Yeah, exactly. Like if I wanted to have a watch party, I'd just invite people over. All right. So Mary, this next question is for you. So this is all about talking at Tribal Council. A. They do not like that they let so much talking during Tribal Council. It kind of ruins it, I think. Go back to the old Survivor days. Or B, I must be the only one who loves all the whispering and backside negotiating. To me, much is revealed by who talks to who. I love the chaos.
Now, I would probably agree slightly more with the second opinion, but are the casuals watching Survivor in order where they know that in the old days they didn't do this, and are more Survivor fans a fan of the older seasons? I'm going to go with the first one. I think that's a more casual
opinion. That is correct.
Opinion.
And most people were not a fan of the whispering. So that had 107 likes, whereas 20 people.
Well, then they should love Nora because she brought it all out into the public.
Didn't she say, let's make the unspoken spoken?
I'm going to speak the unspoken, which is my favorite quote of this episode.
I love that.
I'm going to start using that in my real life. I'm going to speak the unspoken in like meetings and things. I think it'll be very dramatic and no one will take me seriously.
Yeah, I think that's like my favorite quote, but I think my favorite delivery, and there was so much good delivery here, but it's actually not Nora, it's Karishma. When Nora tells the initial split vote pick to Karishma, and Karishma responds, "That's exactly what we wanted!" And her eyes go super wide.
Oh yeah, that was so good. Okay, Mike, this question is for you. This is about the family visit. A, I like the family visit. Adds a dimension to the story that we see that interaction. B, I always hate this episode. Remove this, bring back the auction.
Ooh, I think that the casual audience in general is pretty negative just about things, but I think especially, you know, family visit has been a little long in the tooth. And I know that's something, it's a feeling that a lot of the super fans hold. So I'm going to say that they're aligned here and go with B.
Yes, that is correct. That one had 186 likes to only four likes. It was actually really hard to find a comment that was like, I like the family visit.
I don't know.
So at what point did we break the family visit?
I don't know, but I guess we would have to look at the history of the casuals comments.
I wonder if it was just it's just them doing it over and over and over again. You know, it's sort of like how these endurance challenges we've seen over and over and over again as well. I think it's just repetition makes things grow staler in everyone's eyes, even something that's supposed to be as emotional and, you know, humanizing as the family visit. If you see it a good amount of times and you just plug in different contestants, it starts to get, you know, a little samey.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to mix it up. Maybe what about the pet visit?
Yeah.
Oh, no. How about the enemy visit?
Yes. Actually, ooh. Mike, you're onto something. So there was one contestant that suggested the in-law visit. Where you have to hang out with your in-laws. You actually don't want to win, and it's some form of punishment. So yes, very much on the same page. They also, the casuals in general, hate them crying. It's like, they've only been gone for 28 days, blah, blah, blah. It's not like they've been away from their families for months. So, you know, there's a lot of that we get. All right, Mary, this question is for you. And these are just thoughts on the season in general. A, least favorite Survivor ever. I have no one I'm rooting for. I'm rooting for. I have watched Survivor from the very first season. Or B, this season started off questionable, but it's been getting better and better.
Mm-hmm.
The most positive comment.
Well, normally I would feel like I would go with the negative one just because that's a little bit more where everyone else's voice seems to be. But is this a trick question? I'm gonna fall for it. I'm gonna go for the trick question. I'm gonna say a B.
You should have stuck with the initial guess. It was A. Yes, it was very hard to find a positive comment about the season. Whereas I was stuck with the most positive comment about the season was this season started off questionable, but it's been getting better and better. Which I don't know if that's also the case.
So
it makes me question when they started the season. Did they start the season on the merge?
Yeah. Worst episode you could ever watch. And anything.
I think they're watching it backwards. They watched this most recent episode and then kept watching back to be like, oh, I wonder what happened in the previous episode. Now I'm really intrigued because there's no previously on.
So they turned to whoever they were watching with and they said, okay, now we're going to get to the we're going to get to the current point eventually, but first we're going to start here and then we're going to move backwards and then we're going to come back forward.
So is the general, I know you were skating the comments, but is the general opinion of the season specifically like that first person mentioned that they feel like nobody likable is left?
Yeah. So pretty much, I mean, I saw very few positive comments. Everybody hates Dean. There are the people that don't like Dan. I saw a few positive comments about Janet and a few positive comments about Tommy. Also, people are pretty torn on Nora. They either think she's insane or they think she's insane, but they think she's good TV. So, overall, pretty negative, though.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right. So that concludes our first part of the game. Score is currently 2-1. And we are going to move into the next group of comments, which is the which one I wrote. So this is the traditional form of Casuals Corner where I have pulled comments. Three of them are from the Survivor Facebook page and one of them I wrote. And it's up to you to guess which one I wrote. All right. So, Mike, I'm going to turn the tables back on you and I'm going to see how much you know Nora. And these are all about Nora.
Oh, OK.
A, Nora's not the sharpest marble in the barrel. B,
sharpest?
B, Nora's cheese is not completely on her cracker. C, Nora is cocoa for Cocoa Puffs. D, Nora is a few cards of a deck of cards.
Cocoa for Cocoa Puffs.
I like that she's a few cards of a deck of cards.
Yeah, she's not a few cards short of a deck of cards.
She's only a few cards.
Of a deck of cards.
I think you wrote cheese on the cracker.
No, I wrote Nora's not the sharpest marble in the barrel.
Oh, I thought it was A or B, but it felt like you would have said she's not the best cheese on the cracker.
Nora's cheese is not completely on her cracker.
And she's a vegan, so she wouldn't want cheese on that cracker anyway.
Yeah, unless it's vegan cheese. No, actually, although to be fair, I guess this is a little bit of a trick question. So inside Survivor, I guess maybe not that long ago, but they, for like one season, did kind of a casuals corner write-up where they would pull Facebook comments. And one of them is, I can't remember who it was about, but is not the sharpest marble in the barrel. And that phrase has stuck with me. I love it so much because it's just this weird amalgamation of all these different sayings. So yes, that one I wrote.
I mean, listen, it's no few cards in a deck of cards, yeah, but it'll be suitable.
I kept thinking I was reading that one wrong. I was like, is my brain skipping words somehow? Like, what is going on here?
Off topic, but related with that cheese on the cracker thing. I was at an event last night that had a sign that just pointed out all the different food. And one of them said assorted cheeses. And it was just two plates of American cheese.
Oh, my God. That was on your Insta story. Okay, so I saw that. And I was like, those look like craft singles. They weren't craft singles, were they?
It looked like American cheese. Yeah. I didn't eat it, but it was either Kraft singles or possibly cheddar cheese. Either way, it was not.
I can imagine though, you approach somebody and they're like, what? I assorted them into two different plates.
We had a crowd of people standing around there while I was taking that story. Four other people walked up to me and were laughing at it too.
Maybe it's not assorted cheese. It's sorta cheese.
Yes. It's a sort of cheese.
Yeah. A sort of Jesus. Yeah, that was my favorite thing I saw yesterday. Anyway, that cheese was definitely not going on any cracker. So.
Oh, I'm looking at it now. Oh my God. That is the most unappetizing thing I think I've ever seen at any event.
I couldn't believe it. You were at a work function.
Wow. Yeah, I was at my work holiday party, and all the other food was pretty good, but that one just made me laugh.
But, like, it looked just like Kraft American cheese. Yeah. They just took, like, 64 out of the plastic packaging and put it on plates. Do you work with five-year-olds? Yeah. Are the five-year-olds attending and just grabbing handfuls of it?
The previous story on my Instagram is me and the band, who was also standing around there while they were on a break on a Yadis from playing, and we were all making our reactions to seeing the assorted cheeses.
That's so good. Oh, man. Okay. All right. So enough about cheese. Let's talk about Dean. All right. All right, Mary, this is for you. A. Jesus, take the wheel. What in the name of peanut butter was Dean thinking? Biscuits and gravy.
They already said Jesus, and then they decided, nope, I can't be too sacrilegious. Let me say peanut butter instead.
Yeah. Jesus, take the wheel. What in the name of peanut butter was Dean thinking? Biscuits and gravy. That was the biggest cluster frack I've ever seen. Yep, that's
all one comment?
All right.
Okay.
B. Right. Dean. What were you thinking? He's a wackadoo. C. That Dean is a snake. His mother says he's loyal. She's delusional. His true colors is a worm.
Yes. Is that another color that we can use the reticular activation system for? If you just think worm, 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 the worm color will appear.
Yes, I don't know what the worm color is, but
So Dean's true colors are in the well?
Yeah, exactly. Nora fished him out. He was actually one of the four worms she found in there.
All right. In comment D, Dean to Tommy, "Hello, sir. What kind of victory would you like to order?" Those are your four comments.
Oh. I like the sketch comedy in D, personally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did the casuals go to the meme? What color? Because like worm. What was
Dean,
B?
Dean. What were you thinking? He's a wackadoo.
Okay. You know what? I'm just going to go for the one I liked the most and hope that was yours. I'm going to go with A.
I wish I had written A. It was a glorious comment for sure. No, I wrote B. Wackadoo is also something my mom says. So that's, I think, most of where it came from. So,
yes.
All right, Mike, this is for you. These are all about Jeff Probst. A, they voted Jeff off, but CBS had to edit him back in. Smiley face emoji.
What?
I don't know.
What?
What in the name of peanut butter is that fan
biscuits
fiction?
Biscuits and gravy. All right. Where's Davey? B, Jeff really lost control of that meeting, didn't he? C, why doesn't Jeff Probst get some loved one? D, they left Jeff out. He didn't get his screen time at Tribal.
Ooh, I feel like it might be either B or D because it's talking about the same thing. I like the idea of C with this idea of everyone being brought out and that Jeff goes, and I'm going to bring out my wife. Yeah. Come on.
This is my loved one.
Like, I deserve a little bit of love, too. I love the idea of calling Tribal Council a meeting, but that's B, and I feel like you just did a B. So which one was A again?
They voted Jeff off, but CBS had to edit him back in. Smiley face emoji.
Maybe. I think he did A.
No, I wrote C, the concept of Jeff Probst getting a loved one. Maybe this goes with mimicking him. I don't know. Somehow I'll tie it in. All right, Mary, this is for you. And this is about some new characters that might be on this season.
Oh, no.
A, I'm bummed. Elian had to waste that idol. B, Larissa should have been gone. C,
who is that?
Who is Larissa?
C, Charisma, the drama queen. Or D, Tom got so lucky because of that blonde boy.
At least those are close, except I have no idea who Larissa
is. I don't think anybody
is.
Does.
I guess it's Lauren? Maybe?
Oh, Lauren.
That's the closest in name, maybe.
Perhaps.
Okay. Tom, and then the Charisma, and the first one was... Can you give me the spelling of what the first one was?
E-L-I-A-N.
Oh, like Ilian Gonzalez.
Okay, yes, of course.
Yes. Elian. Yeah. I'm going to go with Tom
that
and the
is
blonde
correct.
Boy.
Yes. Yes. Tom got so lucky because of that blonde boy.
because of that pretty
is
blonde.
Is Dean blonde?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think he has brown hair or it's like a dirty blonde maybe. All right, Mike, this is for you. This is a potpourri question. All right. A. This has got to be the stupidest group of people y'all have ever had on Survivor. Most of them couldn't fight their way out of a wet paper bag. And that's in all caps, just FYI.
I would like to see that endurance challenge next.
Fighting your
who
way.
Who can get their way out of the wet paper bag first.
Yeah. B, this season's script is terrible.
Yeah, go back to Mike White and the writers. Let's punch this up a little bit.
Yeah, send it to the writers' room. C, this part was so annoying, I put on QVC. Or D, when will this season be on Amazon? I'd like to buy it for my grandson and his friends for Christmas.
Oh, well, I don't know what message you'd be sending to your grandson and his friends with this particular season. But, okay, so I feel like... with all the Amazon
why can't her grandson watch now?
Yeah, I was going to say, I figured this out from trolling all those Amazon reviews from last week, that actually a good number of people like buy the season after it's over, just to, I guess, binge it all at once in a pretty streamable format. So I feel like that's legit. The scripted part, I feel like you wrote B. I feel like that's too dumb or too tongue-in-cheek to be written by a casual.
Written by a casual.
What?
Yeah, I must have been inspired by you, Mike. I wrote D. When this season will be on Amazon. So I'm going to buy it for my grandson and his friends.
I don't know. Is the grandson going to watch it with his friends? Like, are they going to make big Survivor watching plans over the holidays?
I don't know. I originally had written, I'd like to buy it for my grandson. And then I was like, for Christmas and for his friends. Like, it just like got more and more out of.
Okay. Can I, you know, I think it's, we've reached the appropriate point in this episode where I out myself, reveal something else embarrassing about my, podcasting career here. I once left a review on News AF pretending to be somebody's aunt. And I wrote a very similar review that was much like what you just said. I think this was before I had actually gotten to know anyone from podcasting. But just want to say, I wrote a fake review. Well, it was an honest review, but I was trying to be funny. And I wrote it as if I was from the perspective of an elderly aunt who was trying to get to know her millennial grandchildren or uncle or nieces or whatever, something like that.
Oh, that's so amazing.
Did
you?
Yeah, it was.
They did?
Yeah,
oh,
they did.
Oh my god.
And I felt kind of bad.
Did you use any stylistic choices, like no punctuation or misspellings or anything like that?
I think I threw in a lot of caps, all caps, which is always good. So I did a little bit of that. And yeah, that really reminded me a lot of that last fake one that you came up with. So just feel like now's the time to air that.
Oh, that's
confession.
Amazing.
What if that's the new way to catfish, is you have to be like an elderly aunt or a grandmother?
Yeah, go with that. Yeah, one. That's, I think, part of the circle. You know, you could do that for the circle. All right. So we're all tied up, actually. It's 2-2. Mary, you could win with a correct answer here. This is our last question. Oh. Otherwise, we're going into a tiebreaker.
Very intense.
All right. This is third person potpourri, a.k.a. the war dog potpourri. A. If she doesn't win immunity or find an idol, she'll be the next judge. B.
What?
What? B. He needs to dig deep if there's treasure to be found. C. She may have spilled the tea, but Dean brewed it. Or D. Why did the guy wait till tribal to tell the other guy that they would be voting him out?
The last one sounds like something Boston Rob would whisper to Sandra.
Hey.
Yeah, hey, that guy, he waited until last minute to tell the other guy. Okay, so C was definitely more witty. I have no clue what the dig deep about the treasure one could possibly mean. And in becoming a judge, I'm guessing that means get on the jury. Yeah, you know, I think because that one requires a leap in logic, I'm going to go with A.
No, that one was real. Apparently, she'll be the next judge. I do believe that refers to the jury. Someone else said that Survivor needed a new director. I think that maybe goes with the script guy's comment, but...
Well, and I mean, Karishma is a lawyer, so maybe they feel like that's just the next step in her career is to become a judge.
Mm.
Do you think Survivor would this season be better or worse if you assumed that the whole thing was, if this was a scripted show?
Ooh, like, yeah, right.
Not like reality TV mm-hmm. is fake and it's scripted, but like this is a
right, like
sitcom.
Legit actors. Yeah.
Better, I guess.
I don't know, but then you would question the writing of, like, clearly this Dan character is despised. Why do they keep him in the show?
It's true.
Yeah, he's the villain, obviously.
Okay, all right, so we are all tied up, so we're going to go into our tiebreaker. So the way this is going to work is Price is Right rules, okay, for how many likes were on this particular tweet. Okay, so closest without going over. And Mike, you'll be answering first. Okay, so this is the quote. All I could think when Nora spilled the beans was effing Nora. She's a peanut emoji.
She's a peanut?
She's a nut.
Well, first, I think that spilling the beans makes sense. I'm assuming that, you know, it was unseen, but Lana came out with the baked beans, as Mary suggested, and threw them out to the crowd. Mm-hmm. So maybe Nora just spilled some of those at Tribal Council. I'm going to go, look, it seems like Nora was big this episode. I'm going to go with 75 likes for Nora is a peanut.
All right, Mary, what do you got?
Give me...
Oh, right. We forgot that Mary's not good at counting.
Yeah, shoot.
We'll get you some leaves and some rocks and sticks, and maybe that'll help you out.
Yeah, let's go 82.
All right. Congratulations, Mike. Comment had one like, and it was me.
Thank you, Liana, for contributing to the the casuals give you so much, so it only makes sense for you to give back.
Exactly. It's like effing Nora. She is a peanut emoji.
Well, let's crack on here. I want to talk about something briefly. I don't know if you guys saw this, but did you see the Ellen Tube video for her Be Kind box that she's shilling out for the holiday season?
Is this at all Survivor?
Surprisingly, it is.
Interesting. Then, no, I have not. I don't typically follow Ellen.
Basically, describe this a little bit. This seems to be like some sort of, you know, like the box companies that tend to like ship boxes of fun things to your door. I'm not entirely sure what a Be Kind box involved. From what I've been researching on the site, it just seems like a bunch of fun Ellen-based things, like a moleskin that says Be Kind on it and a bracelet. I don't know. It really does seem like a mixed bag here. But in pimping out the Be Kind box, Ellen said, this Be Kind box is like has made the rounds. It's so popular. And it showed in the commercial the moment when Jeff Probst revealed the Applebee's reward to the contestants. And, you know, we remember, like, it was the biggest freak out we've seen in quite some time. But they spliced in, instead of Applebee's, the Be Kind box.
Yeah, and so it's like everybody freaking out to the Be Kind box reveal. But you don't see the contents. It's, like, just the box, too. So, yeah.
I don't know how to feel about this, you know? We're crossing the streams. Are we crossing the streams too much here?
Well, or is Ellen just super on top of meme culture and, you know, putting things in like that would have been a good time to use the like Maddie smile meme.
Well, I mean, OK, this was like my biggest question because it's the first. So they do like a series of these where it's like they've edited in the Be Kind box. But it's like, sir, like, no offense to us, but like Survivor. Like it just seemed like a little bit of an odd choice that was the first one that they went with.
Right. So, yeah, if you're going with the memes, I feel like if you're ranking, you know, pop culture through memetic value, Survivor's got to be like at least in the hundreds.
Right.
Like, and that's purely buoyed by the Maddie gif. Everything else has not broken outside of, you know, the Survivor fandom. Even Big Brother has the Davon joyously walking out of the house that has like made its way into the mainstream. Survivor doesn't really have that. So, yeah, she really must have like a really, I don't know, in-depth fan to be like, no, Ellen, I got this perfect thing you could plug in here. Here's this reward from episode 5 of Survivor this season. I remember it all the way back.
Well, much in the same way that this was some of the best Applebee's press in a while, maybe Survivor took a leaf out of that book and decided that they could sell their own clip to Ellen to get some promotion.
Ooh, we were thinking about this as Ellen picked Survivor, but yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the other way around.
Like, Survivor has now decided to start selling itself as stock footage.
Yes.
Like, basically, this is the new Wilhelm scream, is everyone screaming
exactly
over whatever prize may come.
I mean, it also makes sense, right? You know, it's a new version of syndication, right? You sell your footage as stock footage for all the talk shows, right?
Okay, I like this. So do we think that, like, this can be used for, like, any product now? So, like, if I'm in Detroit selling Mitsubishis, I could then do a commercial for my dealership where Jeff Probst reveals a mini Mitsubishi underneath his tarp and everyone freaks out about it.
I mean, yeah, Rob has talked about this before. There is no better food advertisement than to give survivors the food. Like, it doesn't matter how crappy the food is. Like, survivors will still go crazy for it. So this is just sort of the intermediate level of that. Like, yeah, okay, you didn't shell out to actually bring the food out there to Survivor or the car or whatever the reward was, but okay, you can like go halfway and just get the footage of it. That's close enough.
Yeah, and you've got all these people who are cold and don't have a whole lot of clothing. This would be great for clothing advertisers. You know, if any of them wanted to use some of that footage of Survivor, you know, contestants being cold, sitting under their shelter, maybe you need a weighted blanket, or maybe you need a new coat.
Could it be used to sell a person? Like if I make not in that regard.
Where are you going with this, Mike?
If I'm like making a video for like my Tinder profile, I don't know if you make videos for Tinder profiles, but if I were to, could I intersplice myself under the tarp and then have everyone go gaga over me to show how appealing I am?
That's okay. I was a little nervous when we started here, but
no, I do not promote human trafficking via Survivor footage.
I also really like this world you think we live in, where there are video, where people go through the time to make video profiles for Tinder. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, but think, like, you'll stand out if you have a video of yourself and all of the survivors just, like, being so amazed that you exist.
You exist.
Yeah. Yeah, that's possible. I mean, there are probably some people who have been on Survivor who have used pictures of themselves on Survivor to promote their own, dating social media profiles.
There you go.
So I think
maybe
it'll
all come full circle where you use this in your Survivor audition video.
Oh,
or you know what you do? You act out being excited in front of a green screen and then splice yourself into the scene from the castaway's perspective.
Like, you're in there too.
Yeah, like you're Forrest Gump.
Yes. Okay, great. Well, then they'll think they've already cast you on a season of Survivor.
Well, then you can sneak your way into a returning season.
Ah, yes. You're somehow on second chances. It's like you've never played before. There's just nothing but Photoshop footage of you, like, somehow put in a season. Okay, if you had to Photoshop yourself into a season of Survivor, what season of Survivor would you pick?
Well, it's pretty obvious. Like, I could very easily just do South Pacific and put my head on Cochran's body.
Mm.
It's very simply done. Like, it's not going to look very disingenuous whatsoever.
Well, I think the easiest one is you just go with Samoa. I mean, they already photoshopped Brett into that whole season, so they could just Photoshop me in.
Easy enough.
Or I guess the question is, do you go with a season like Guatemala that nobody really considers, so they're not going to, like, fact check you on the fact if you were in it or not?
Yeah, they'll be like, yeah, I'm sure. Dave's Guatemala. Yeah, probably. That sounds right.
Yeah, because I mean, there are people working on it who are like weren't around back then. So they're like, yeah, I mean, I wasn't around. So you probably know better than me. Yeah. Come on. You're on board for Game Changers too.
Yeah. Jordan Kalish will be the only one who knows that, like, you weren't actually on Guatemala.
All right, well, let's move into our final segment here. The question of the week. Last week's question of the week. Who would you enlist in the GOAT army, either from Survivor or your life? We'll read some listener answers. Maybe we'll give a few of our own answers as well. Parker Schimler says, I would add one of my coworkers to the GOAT army. He has been described as others that have met him as the one that looks like he doesn't know anything. He is also blissfully unaware of why he keeps getting moved around each year. Oh, well, Mary, he's unintentionally procrastinating.
Ah, perfect. Yeah. That's a good vote, then.
I just like this, the poor person has just poor luck that they don't know what's going on.
Yeah, that sounds like one of my coworkers, too. Maybe these two coworkers can be friends.
Asher Streets says, fun times. I think the hashtag GOAT army needs Survivor China contestant Eric Huffman bleeding out in front, the communications specialist. Yeah, for those of you that don't remember, there was a reward in Survivor China where they saw some goats on the riverbank and Eric just started bleeding out of nowhere. And it was really weird, but amazing.
I remember that. I related to that as someone who, whenever my mom and I were on road trips and we would see animals outside the window, she would just, you know, yell whatever that animal sound was, cows moo, bleeding for goats. So it made me feel like home.
You know what I realized, actually? The closest analog to Dean from American Survivor might be Eric Huffman.
I could see
like,
that.
Like, think about it. He's like, he like has some normal qualities, but he's like also very quirky. He had like the pseudo showmance thing going on. Jamie with Eric, Chelsea with Dean. And much like Eric could have like potentially ruined the James blind side by not voting with PG. Some have said that Dean has ruined the game by telling Tommy that he was voting him
out.
There
we go. I think you've cracked the code.
John Tinkham says, my Survivor Goat Army would consist of the Warwick Davis, parentheses, $8 million net worth, played character Willow and several actual goats that he can morph into whatever we wanted. So I don't know how familiar you are with Warwick Davis. Apparently we're pronouncing it weirdly according to those across the pond, but I'll keep saying it. But yeah, apparently he won him recruited for the goat army.
Uh-huh. Oh, that could work.
Wait, it's not Warwick Davis? Well,
no, it is. It's just I'm looking at pictures of him now. This is interesting. It almost looks like he has like weird long hair.
What's weird about his long hair?
Well, yeah. Just that we're used to like him seeing him in like I think he has shorter hair, and we're obviously used to seeing him in a bunch of guises. But like he has like a Ned Stark mane to him.
What a revelation!
I guess I don't know what I was expecting.
Yeah, well, I don't know
but
what
I didn't
you were
expect
expecting.
To see long hair on him.
Okay. Well, next time I see you, if you haven't had a haircut, I'll comment on your weird long hair.
We'll get Warwick in, but listen, the Goat Army only accepts certain haircuts, so I think poor Willow's going to have to see the barber.
I'll just shave it right off.
Well, speaking of Renap, John says for the Renap Goat Army, Rob would be captain, Akiva is lieutenant, Will from America and Jessica East are sergeants, and all guests are privates or specialists. Leon, I think we'd rather be privates, right?
I don't know. That's private. What do I get to be if I'm a specialist?
I don't know. I mean, do you then need to like be given a name from the specialist?
Right. Do I have to wear pink underwear?
So.
I don't know. I don't know exactly what's included here.
Yeah, that's the uniform. It's only they're the most dangerous position because that's all you can wear. So, I mean, not a lot of shielding going on.
Oh,
unless you grow your hair out.
I'm inspired by Warwick Davis.
And Mary says, answering about the question of the week, my goat army would meet here and would include Janet because she's amazing. Also, Karishma, Nora, Lauren, and Elaine because hashtag Black Widows. And she sent us a picture of the goat saloon.
Yes, the goat saloon. If Janet, Karishma, Nora, Lauren, and Elaine had gotten together, that would have been pretty fun. And I could definitely see them meeting at the goat saloon.
I would have loved it as well. And I can only imagine, like, obviously, I think the goat saloon is like super cheeky, like the Hogshead from Harry Potter. But God would hope that like there's got to be some sort of goat component involved, right?
What does that mean? If a restaurant has a goat component, what?
maybe the waiters dress up like goats. Maybe there's.
Do they have a tray of assorted goat cheese?
Exactly, which is only one type. But maybe, you know, they like to read the three Billy Goats gruff. Maybe the only people that can sit there are the greatest of all time in their respective fields.
Or those are the pictures of the people that they have up on the walls of the restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the goats.
But they're sketched out to resemble goats.
Yes, caricatures. Yes, of course.
Listen,
The goat yoga people from The Amazing Race.
Yeah, like they can
up.
Do that, you know, in their off hours. I think a goat themed restaurant is not too out of the barrel of marbles here. Jennifer Jones says my goat army edition would be goats Mary and Bobby and sent a picture of two goats.
Those are her goats,
right? I love
that's
that.
That's so cute.
That is really cute. Thank you for sending pictures of the goats. That's really fun. The great Kirsten McInnes said, I want the goats from Game Changers as foot soldiers in the goat army. Thank God Sandra let them go. Well, actually, she didn't, though, right? Didn't people say afterwards that off camera she ended up killing the goat?
Yeah, that's what I heard. Oh. So that goat army got a little bit smaller.
Yeah, exactly.
Was she killing the goats when she was procrastinating
Perhaps.
From doing
that,
other
That's
things
a pretty weighty task. You know, it's very productive in certain values, but it takes time away from needing to sabotage other people or hide sugar.
Oh.
Jonathan Troyer says, I would draft Henry McCarthy into the goat army because he's better known as Billy the Kid. And that's two different kinds of goats in one name.
Oh, man, that's good. Billy the Kid in the goat army. Wow. That would have to be the leader, right? Like with that type of name, you have to have the most power.
So it's because purely by name he gets that position?
I think so. I think that's how it works.
Sir Mayan says, I would enlist the goat from the Taylor Swift goat video into the goat army. Do you guys remember the screaming goat meme?
Yeah, I mean, I do now.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think, I don't know if that supersedes the Survivor celebrating gif, apparently, in terms of meme culture. Actually, I'm pretty sure Ellen featured that goat as well.
I think so, too. When we look back at top memes of, you know, the last 10 years, yeah, I'm sure that'll be one of them along with the Survivor one.
Logan said, I had a hockey teammate who would have been a great member of the GOAT army. He would be out of energy 20 seconds into a game, constantly go to the wrong rink, and is the only player I know that could be asleep with his pants to his ankles with a bucket of chicken 10 minutes before a game if he made it. Mary, I think I found your soulmate.
Oh my gosh.
I love it. I love people that are just so incompetent that it's funny. Right?
I love this hockey player who consistently goes to the wrong rink.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, he's constantly moving, and so he doesn't remember which rink.
Well, listen, dude, like, maybe his energy problem isn't from, like, any sort of lack of endurance. It's more so for the fact that he's just downing buckets of chicken while he's sleeping on the toilet.
Yeah, that's too much chicken.
So to finish things off, Josh Green compiled a literal goat army from all of the quote-unquote goats from Survivor's past. And so see if you agree or disagree with Josh's list here. Twyla Tanner, Katie Gallagher, Jane Wright, Matthew Sash Lenihan, Philip Shepard, Albert Destrade, Michael Scoopin, Wu Wang, Missy Payne, Will Sims, which he says is the best goat in the history of Survivor, Tasha Fox, Joe Del Campo, Ken McNichol, Hannah Shapiro, Ryan Ulrich, Angela Perkins, Laurel Johnson, Angelina Keeley, Julie Rosenberg, and Dean Kowalski.
Oh, Dean.
Well, I'm going to fight on Joe Del Campo. That's he's not a goat. Wow, those are some good ones. I like that we included Dean.
Oh, you know, Thank Dean you. Is, I think, a self-denying goat.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that little blonde boy over there is a... He's going to be a great goat. That's an extensive list.
Very
there.
Extensive. As long as they're led by Billy the Kid, then I think we have the perfect goat army.
I think you could add Lil to the list. I feel like she was a pretty big goat to the point where, like, anyone who was going to the end with one of the outcasts wouldn't win or would win.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Maybe she could be like the. Nope. I don't know how much scoutmasters translate to the army, but she could be like the boot camp captain.
Was Mick trimming on that?
Oh,
list?
Oh no! Maybe he's too feckless to for the goat army.
Oh,
all right. Did you guys have any thoughts as to people you would want to add to the goat army?
Well, in the fever dream that is my brain, somehow I just have a list of people here. And I think I understand why I put these people down, because I think I took goat a little too literally. First, I wrote Big Tom because he was a goat farmer. But there's a big question mark next to that. Then there's just a dashed line that says Steve Chicken Morris. And then there's a line that says Flicka. Then another line that says Papa Bear. I think I was just coming
were,
up
were
with
you,
people
Were you doing
who
like
free
association
names?
Here? Or like just going A to B?
I think I was just going with animal named people, because then I also have Courtney Moon, and then there's just a picture in this Word
document with the whale hat.
That has with the whale hat. So I think I took this a little too literally. This is my army of people who remind me of animals, either in name or
and much
in
like
hat.
Nora, who literally got punched in the face. A literal interpretation of the goat army.
I love this idea of, like,
so
Mary, you
I
didn't...
I'm going to leave
Yeah, I mean, you
this.
Didn't compile a goat army. You compiled a Survivor vet clinic of people coming in.
It's my favorite. Steve Chicken Morris is the general. Big Tom is the private, I guess. I don't know.
I was thinking similarly. So. I actually had Mark the Chicken as one of my possible options. Oh. But I actually, my favorite answer I came up with is actually not a person, but it's the bocce ball tournament from Samoa. That challenge is like pure goat.
You said that as if, unlike Mark the Chicken, who
yeah,
is a person.
You know, Mark the Chicken. I mean, Taya, like, chickens are people.
No, I love that, though. Okay, I love this concept, though. So the boot camp for the goat army is going to be like Survivor Shuffleboard, Bocce ball. That one time they played Battleship in Survivor Fiji. Right. Like, all of these very inadequate challenges.
The one that Troy's Anne hosted.
Yeah, like,
ropes.
When they threw the bolos around the things. The bowling that they did two seasons in a row for some reason.
Yeah, like, why that needed to happen again. No one will ever know. Yeah, I like it. I think it's, like, a whole new class.
All right. For next week, there was a really interesting quote from Jeff Probst in the Endurance Challenge where after Janet fell and apparently took a good amount of skin off that poor foot, Jeff called her a weeble wobble because she fell down but was able to get right back up. So we're going to be a little Probstian here next week. I want you all out there to make a Jeff Probst quote that compares a player to a toy. Or to an action figure, or to, ooh, I don't know, a doll or anything like that. You know, the holiday season is upon us. Gifts are running through our heads. So I think it only makes sense to see how that's going to translate to Survivor as well. You can always send this to us on Twitter using hashtag RHAPBNB. Email to them to us, RHAPBNB@gmail.com. Or put it on any sort of the random forums that this podcast gets posted. We'll be reviewing that all next week with your co-host, Liana, from the Masked Singer Rehab Up. Hoo-yah! It's coming back to the B&B.
Yes, and I hope that this podcast will be more coherent than what we've been putting out on the Masked Singer podcast. That's been a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to having Puya and talk about something that is not, I don't know. We might be talking about, I was going to say not animals, but I think we're going to be talking about more goats, more animals here on Survivor as well. So who knows?
Yeah, considering the tenor of this podcast, I think that substance is we're not going for substance here.
Right.
You know, again, we are just these productive non-activities to clog up people's feeds that will hopefully get them through the day.
You're welcome.
Well, Mary, thank you so much for coming on to teach us all about procrastination, your life. Anything basically under the sun. It was so much fun to hear you talk about Survivor and everything outside of it. For people who want to know more about you and your experiences with assorted cheeses and otherwise, how can people catch up with you on social media and what you're doing in the podcast sphere?
Sure. If you just want pictures of cheese, then head on over to my Instagram at Frail Mary. Actually, all my social media is at Frail Mary, so you can find that. You can also check out me and Kirsten McInnes on the Kowski Cast, which is Cow with a K, where we cover Riverdale, and we have a Survivor podcast that will be coming out soon that I'm doing with Matt Liguori on there. So if anyone is interested in that, you can check it out. It's it's about the same level of ridiculous as the B&B. So if you like this kind of thing, head on over there.
All right. And Liana, I know you just came out wearing a shirt that had your podcast on them, but do you want to explain this to all the people and their loved ones standing around?
That's right. Just in case it's not clear. Yes, you can find me on social media at Liana Boris. As I mentioned before, doing the Masked Singer podcast, which is just so, so, so much fun. So we're going to be wrapping that up in the next couple weeks. The finale is actually the same day as Survivor. So there's going to be a lot of content coming out there. And then Mike Bloom, myself and Brent Walgamont got together to talk about RuPaul's Drag Race UK. So sort of a season summary podcast, giving all our thoughts on what went down this past season. So look for that in your reality TV or wrap-up thread or the RuPaul's Drag Race only thread.
Yeah, and spoiler alert, we all liked it. I would also say it's very spoiler-filled, so please make sure you've watched the entire season. I very much recommend you do because, again, I was very candid, but it might have been the most I enjoyed RuPaul's Drag Race since the seasons that first got me into the show. Really a lot of fun. You can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. You can check out the exit press I do for Survivor 39 on parade.com. I really enjoyed getting to speak with Karishma this week. She talked a bit about her endgame plan, how she was planning to make Dean her goat and vice versa, sort of her reactions to everything going on in that tribal council. And in general, you know, the journey that she went through over the course of those 32 days. It was really eye opening in a number of ways, much as the experience was eye opening to her. So I really encourage you guys to check that out. Of course, Josh Wiggler and I are going down the hatch. We are briefing a bunch of podcasts right now before Josh goes away for a month or so. So we are hot and heavy with Down the Hatch, but we are putting them out one a week as per usual. So be sure to check all that out. Also, Liana and I were on Robin Akiva Need a Podcast last week to talk some games. Leon and I were actually put in the game player seat permanently for that episode. It was a ridiculous amount of fun. It was very silly. It was very stupid. But if you ever needed to have Rob Cesternino describe bras to you in your life, then you need to check out this podcast. It was so much fun. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of the B&B. We'll be back next week with Puya to talk about the penultimate episode of Survivor Island of the Idols. Special thanks to Scott and St. Pierre for editing this behind the scenes. Paul Osselson as our head writer, Wolf from America for our theme song. If you guys have game suggestions, still a couple weeks to get those in before we wrap up the season, feel free to email them to us, rhapbnb@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Mary, Liana, thank you both. We'll check you out at your next stay. Alpha, bye, girl, bye.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B.
You can stay for free.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.